Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Champions versus Contenders, or what we're shortening to C-Square. This is already way too long. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about the first two episodes of this season, which I am so excited to do, and I'm especially pumped up because I have such a good guest with me today. Like, it's a little bit of a thrill for me personally, someone who is one of my favorite Survivor players ever, one of my favorite podcasters. He's a know-it-all, so we brought him to the know-it-alls. Please welcome Stephen Fishback. Stephen, thank you so much for being here.
Oh my God, I'm so thrilled. I'm so excited to be talking to you today. We have been, you know, tweeting at each other for a while, and we've exchanged some DMs about Survivor strategy, and I feel like we're typically so simpatico, and so today we're going to just have to like manufacture conflict in order to fill time. No, but it's really exciting because I feel like, you know, we are very much on the same page with stuff, and I've always wanted to podcast with you, so I'm delighted to be here. I did the last Champions versus Contenders. I did their first episode as well. So I'm really an expert in talking about the first episode of Champions versus Contenders.
Yes. I mean, you were there the first week. That's where I got the idea, really, from Nick doing you great in that first week for last season. So I was like, we'll bring you on for the next season because, you know, it's Australia's Greatest Grudge Match Chapter 2. So let's just kind of like have the same schedule for the podcast. But yeah, no, yeah. Our opinions are very much the same. And I think we just really validate each other, which is something we both really need. That's another similarity. So that's why I got you on the podcast.
Yeah, just so we could feel good about ourselves.
Yes.
All right, great. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm even more looking forward to it now.
That's something that listeners love, when two podcasters are just basically pumping up their own ideas, not really showing diversity of opinion. And that's really good podcasting. So it's going to be a really great podcast with you.
Well, I'm sure that you'll say something totally wrongheaded. I'm sure I will say something totally wrongheaded.
You both know that's not true.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. Yeah. Let's. Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, you know, Champions versus Contenders is here. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we jump into these two episodes, like 3 hours of content. There was a lot of Survivor on this week for me. We've got this recap now with Stephen Fishback. We're going to have the X interviews straight after this in the same podcast. So a lot of great stuff happening. But Stephen, two episodes in, you just watched it. What is your gut reaction about these two episodes?
I mean, I'm really excited. Like, this really got me hyped up about the show again. And, you know, I mean, so we're in obviously the Survivor offseason for the US Survivor. And so I don't even I haven't even thinking about Survivor other than the sort of rumor mill. But last night I actually had a nightmare about Survivor. And that's how I know it's time to start podcasting about the show again. But I feel like this episode, this season, like, what an epic beginning. I feel like something Australian Survivor does really, really well is just tap into the kind of epic atmosphere of this show with that slow motion wade through the water and just the real buildup of this conflict. And I think that, that just sets the tone that this is a huge battle and that all of these people are so invested in it.
Yeah, I mean, we have the time to set the scene. The first episode, I think, was 85 minutes of just raw footage. The second episode was 75 minutes. Like, this is a lot of time we have to have those, like, really big nature shots and just make you realize that this is a big battle. You know, as an Australian myself, I don't feel that Champions versus Contenders is our greatest grudge match, you know? I feel like, I don't know if, I guess I'm a contender. I don't hold anything against people who are famous. I think that they earned that right. I really just don't feel like it's a grudge match, but they've really set it up now that they needed 2 seasons in 2 years to kind of play out Champions versus Contenders.
Oh, so this was intended from the start to be like a 2-season kind of arc?
I don't think so, no. I think that last season had the best ratings yet of the three. And Australian Survivor 2017, which is one of my favorite seasons ever, had the worst ratings. Oh, so they're trying to pander to a casual audience, I guess, and get those big names out there. And then when it worked well and they got the ratings for it, they just did the exact same thing again. And, you know, the premiere was apparently the best ratings they've had so far for a premiere. So, you know what? The system works. And we might be doing Champions versus Contenders 10.0, you know, every season just to get it on the air.
I think it's a really fun format. I kind of wish the U.S. Here's my first wrongheaded thing of the podcast. I feel like it would be kind of cool if the U.S. did something similar to this. You know, like, not like mainstream A-list athletes, but these sort of like faded. I guess they do sometimes like cast like one or two of those people, but
not enough to make the majority on a tribe.
Yeah, yeah. Now, being, are you familiar with these champions? You sort of, I would imagine that you kind of grew up idolizing, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like who the funniest one would be. Steven would be the funniest.
Luke's the only one I've grown up idolizing for the last 2 years. We did get this question from our international listeners, like, who do you as an Australian, who would you have recognized? And I have to say, by face, none of them. So, but by name, I think the people that they were really recognizing, like the contenders are recognizing off the bat, was pretty on point. Simon Black is someone who I, as an AFL fan, would definitely recognize the name. He's a Brownlow medalist. Like, he was, you know, a really big player. ET is not someone I would have known because I don't watch NRL, but I feel like he's like kind of that corresponding person to Simon Black for a different sporting code. So I can see how people would definitely know him. And then they also knew Luke. He's the only one I would have recognized by face. Janine Ellis I might have recognized from Shark Tank. She was someone. And then Steve Bradbury, I would have known the name, but I could walk past him on the street and wouldn't have known him. Someone else I definitely would have recognized by name, which is a weird one, is Sean on the Contenders Tribe, is Sean Hampson. And I said, you know, I watch AFL. He's an ex-AFL player on the Contenders Tribe. He's married, or at least in a long-term relationship with Megan Gale, who is a supermodel. So yeah, I would have known like those five or so champions and that one contender. To Sean Hampson, who is just like not at all addressed in the show.
Yeah, why is he a contender? I didn't understand that. Like, he's a retired AFL guy, yeah. And then there's like another retired AFL person who is a champion. Where was he just never a champion? Did he just lose a lot?
Well, he did, but also like he played 98 games. Simon Black is like an actual champion. He's won every single AFL award that exists. He was in three premierships, which is, you know, he won like the biggest trophy. He was our like MVP as well. Like, he's definitely a champion. I still think Sean Hampson could have been a champion, like maybe over like the model or something. He's definitely married to someone who would have been considered a champion, but I just think they thought maybe compared to Simon Black, he's more of a contender. I also think like maybe these tribes are kind of arbitrary and they just wanted to, you know, make the balance of the tribes right. My brother did some research on this and he played against Simon Black, I think like 6 times in his career.
Oh, so, wow. It's maybe a real grudge match.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a grudge match. Maybe they thought they didn't want to put them on the same tribe. I don't really know. I feel like maybe they just thought that would be 8 athletes on one tribe, and that would be too many compared to 7. It's a pretty arbitrary choice for me.
Someone who I mistakenly recognize is that Ross looks exactly like Ian McShane from Deadwood. Okay. Or sometimes he looks kind of like Deep Roy, who was the guy who played the Oompa Loompas in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the remake with Johnny Depp. He looks like a cross between those two guys.
Yeah, well, maybe in another life. I mean, Ross is crazy. Who knows what he's doing on the side?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I kind of like always get excited like, oh, yeah, the champion. You know, I root for the top dogs. I root against the underdogs.
Yeah, Australians seem to be doing that too. I mean, I'm definitely rooting for the champions because I know so few of these contenders. I don't want Luke to get voted out. This is what I'm like when I watch returnees on the show. I care so much that they keep Luke on the show that I just really don't want him to go to tribal council to have to worry about it. I mean, he's got so many confessionals compared to everyone else. I think someone sent me a confessional chart and like everyone else was maximum average 3 other than Andy, who had 14 across the 2 episodes, and Luke has 17 across the 2 episodes.
Oh, and Andy is someone I recognize actually, because he is a long-term Survivor Know-It-Alls viewer. He's come to a number of our live shows.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I always thought, I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. Like, I've met him like quite a few times and he's awesome. Like, I've always really enjoyed him at the events. And I always thought like this guy should be on Survivor. And I was right.
Oh my God. Okay. That is like breaking news. Wow. He's a real fan. That's great to hear.
Yeah, well, he said quite a few times he's like an ultra super duper fan, but he wasn't kidding. Like, he has been in New York for the Survivor Know-It-Alls quite a few times.
Well, it was worrying me that he kept saying ultra fan because that's not like a verbiage that exists. And also,
he's taking it to the next level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone thinks they're a super fan, right? Like, even if you're not a super fan. So you never really know when people give themselves that title. But yeah, no, if he's going to International Know-It-Alls, I will bestow it on him, which is that's what everyone wants, that validation from me.
Well, yeah.
He's an ultra fan.
He's legit. He is legit an ultra fan. And I thought like he could not. Could we just jump in? Like, I felt like he played it perfectly. You know, he really, really did exactly what he should have done, which is, you know, kind of like nudge the strategic ball forward, but like did not come out of the gate too hard at all. He really played it close to his golf cap.
Okay, yeah, I want to talk about the strategy of the episode, and I feel like I was really happy to see the contenders go to Tribal Council in the second episode, because that makes for a much cleaner podcast for me. So we can talk about the champions, who are basically episode one, and we can talk about the contenders, who are basically episode two, and that's just neat podcasting, so I love that. But I do want to start with the champions, because we saw so much of them, especially that first episode where, like, we really just got to know Andy of the contenders and pretty much no one else. And I'm now so happy about that, now that I know he's been to RHAP live shows. Before, I was like, show us other people. Now I'm like, really don't do that. But the champions were defined by this 47. And Stephen, I don't want to speak for you, but I also kind of do, because I saw Survivor Cambodia. For me, this is a collective nightmare, I think. I think you might agree. Also kind of like a self-parody of Australian Survivor. It sounds like something where they go, ugh, you know, Australian Survivor is so sporty that they could have a tribe of former athletes and they'd have the majority on that tribe. And like, literally that is true. Like, that was the biggest winning number, was former athletes.
Well, I thought it was a really smart move from Steven's perspective, who, you know, was quickly formed that group and then like quickly took his foot off the accelerator. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the strategy, he just created this group of seven, like right out of the gate, and then immediately managed to kind of, you know, as they were sort of looking to him for strategic leadership as the person who had brought them together, immediately was like, well, you guys tell me what to do. And I thought, like, you know, really, I mean, as much as I would have been sad to be on that tribe, you know, and I'm sure Luke was sad to be on that tribe. I thought a pretty impressive feat on his behalf.
Yeah, buy on vibes for me. I don't know if it was just because you were coming on the podcast, but that like alpha group definitely was a buy on thing. And here as well, you know, what I loved about it for Steve Bradbury is that firstly, it was something really comfortable that everyone could cling to from the get-go. You know, you don't want to be the first boot. So if you're going to go to Tribal Council, no one's going to deviate from that. And they really didn't. Like, Susie was the only name thrown out by the other people. And that was really never a consideration. It became like the other five had to throw each other under the bus. So like, really good majority there, really comfortable. It kind of speaks to all these people's identities where they're athletes. And then what I really loved about it was that the 47 are not the most athletic seven on the tribe. I mean, you've got like David, the model there, who's like clearly one of the most athletic. And like, you know, Luke has been quite good as well. Like someone like Steve, who says, I'm not in the shape I once was, is now in the 47, which is not that athletic, but has like an aura of athleticism. So when they're talking, as you always do in the beginning of Australian Survivor, about this really physical game, none of their names are really coming up, right? Because they're athletes. It doesn't really matter that they were athletes in the 90s, right? Like, they're the athletes, so they're going to stick around. So the way that Steve kind of put that out there, A, from a numbers perspective, and B, just from like a perspective of doing the game and how you would see these people as sporty, I thought was great for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And like you said, like it's an easy thread for them all to connect to. It's not just some arbitrary, like we're the cool kids, you're not the cool kids. It taps into this idea that they all have this shared background and that shared background is meaningful in terms of Survivor, because it's, you know, not just a question of athleticism, but also a question of tenacity and the ability to come back. And it's interestingly, not a ton of like super strong personalities in that group. You know, you'd think that maybe like former sports stars, you'd have a little bit of braggadocio. But, you know, in terms of like the Bion vibes, E.T. is probably the closest to Savage. Yeah. He even kind of has like a squint like Savage.
Yeah.
But he's not like Savage-onian at all. You know, he's not like legislating who should go. You know, he's really like listening to other people. It was Nova who really, who kind of drove that first boot. So I felt like, you know, as much as I root against this athletic alliance, it felt like it actually might have legs, you know?
Yeah. Well, Susie said even in the second episode that the reason the athletes all kind of come together is because they're used to like pushing through pain and all the things you kind of need to be a professional athlete and like the effort that requires, which like, I guess, you know, I mean, would you say that the other people haven't put effort into their lives? You know, Luke's just an everyday guy kind of struggling for his family. I think he's putting effort into his life. But again, it's something they can all connect over. I was pretty impressed with ET because, look, in the preseason, I said about him, he's basically the cookie cutter athlete who will be the leader. And he immediately became that, I think, from like a camp life perspective. But he looked pretty uncomfortable with the strategizing of it all. He was the one who kind kind of was forced to throw out Pia's name as the weakest, but he didn't put his foot down with that. And I think that's great. Like, if you're going to have to be the leader and you're kind of forced into that role and it really is who you naturally are, so you're going to do that, then not putting your foot down on this kind of meaningless first vote, I think actually worked really well for him. And yeah, Nova got her way and I was really impressed with what she did, and we'll definitely talk about that. But then I'm also concerned that people are saying that she's playing hard, and it's like, if you get your way on the first vote, do you win on day 50? Like, that's a, you know, maybe you don't need to get your way on the first vote. Like, that's a very long game to play.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. And that first moment where they were all kind of talking about this is the problem, Shannon, and we're just agreeing with each other. that first moment when they're talking, like, right, you know, talking about, you know, who to vote out. Like you said, you know, E.T., who is the first, is the person to name Pia, is not, you know, he first defers to Steven, and then Steven, you know, defers back.
Yeah,
and
loves it right just, back. You know,
yeah. Yeah. So it was a great, I mean, there didn't really seem to be this, like this sense of, you know, where anyone is, you know, until Nova stabbed up, that anyone is the boss of this group, you know, which tragically left, Luke on the outside, David on the outside, obviously Pia on the outside, and Anastasia on the outside. And that was, and I'm forgetting someone, right? Janine. There's one more person.
Janine from Bruce.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The friendly five is what I'm calling them. Love compared to the sporty seven. I don't really have a name for it.
Yeah, okay. But that works. Friendly five. All right.
Because like it was kind of, it was shown to us as physical versus social, or like beach people versus shelter people. Like, it's kind of the thing we've seen over and over again, even though it's, you know, with, you know, former sports stars. But I think I was interested because when I did my ex interview with Anastasia, which is coming up later in the podcast, she was like, I kind of got along with everyone, but like Nova didn't like me. And that was enough to send her home. And I was wondering about that. But I honestly think it might be because Nova was the only one willing to step up and get her way. And if everyone else is like, whatever, I'm happy to just not make this my decision, then if one person is going to put their foot down and have a decision, then that's what you're going to go with.
Yeah, it was particularly frustrating because we saw Anastasia, like, you know, really trying to not irk Nova and obviously failing, you know, like, I'm sure those interactions where Anastasia saw herself as self-censoring and, you know, like retreating from that role that Nova had, like Nova probably still sensed that level of frustration and antagonism that kind of immediately seemed to manifest between them, because they obviously both kind of imagined themselves as having similar roles. I am curious to talk about the Nova thing, because I agree, like, you know, nobody, it's not necessarily a great thing to be the person to get your way and put your foot down, but it's also not a great thing to have someone in the game who doesn't like you.
Yeah.
As Anastasia clearly did not like Nova.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nova more didn't like Anastasia. For Anastasia, I mean, a wise man once said in Australian Survivor, you have to, you know, find the dickhead first. And if you can't find them, it may be you. I'm not saying Anastasia was the dickhead, but it wasn't a great sign when she got a confessional being like, you know, no one's rubbing anyone the wrong way. Cut to her rubbing Nova the wrong way. yeah, I mean, for Nova, it's a bit hard because in her demographic, like, I really thought she could be like a first group potential as like the one minority on the season as a woman. Never a good thing. The fact that she wasn't targeted, again, I credit to Steve, this aura of athleticism where Nova's in the athletic seven compared to David the model is just crazy to me. That's why I'm so impressed with what Steve did. But then also the fact that she could get over her way, it does impress me. And I guess we'll see if it does come back to bite her, but it's true. She seems to have a good relationship with Pia. She likes her energy around camp. If she thinks she can work with Pia down the line, it's a balance. As Andy said in the next tribal council, and there were some similarities there about basically, you know, trying to save someone you can work with versus pushing too hard for your vote. But if she, you know, she's still in this majority so far, she had every single person wanting to work with her. The friendly five were trying to recruit her as well. So she has those connections and she did get her way. Like, I don't really see too much wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And, you know, like you don't want, I mean, it, you know, big difference between Nova and Matt, right? Where Nova was, I mean, I guess we'll talk about this more, but like, you know, Nova made her case. She put forth a name. She said, I want to get rid of this person. But we didn't see her really like beating the drum at tribal council. You know, it didn't seem to be like such a contentious issue. Whereas, you know, Matt, on the contender side, he, you know, didn't get his way, and boy, did everybody know it.
Yeah. And I also think with Nova, we talked about how Steve didn't want to say the name and E.T. didn't want to say the name. It's like, in that first boot, people might even be grateful that someone's just being like, this is what we're doing. It's like if it's like a Saturday night and everyone's deciding what movie to watch and no one can tell which movie to watch, you know? And someone's finally like, this is what we're watching. Like, you're grateful to that person for just freaking making a decision. So I think I think it could be a good thing. I was impressed with what Nova did. The fact that she came out there, earned respect by making the fire, and seemed to have kind of genuine one-on-one connection. She didn't want Susie to go. She went straight back to Susie with the intel that she got. She seemed to like Pia. You know, she got the name out there that was least beneficial for her moving forward, and she feels like she can work with more people.
There was something a little bit annoying about, like, I'm in charge of the horror, like, I'm in charge of cooking thing. Like, I made the fire. I'm in charge of cooking. I put it on. You know, there was, it kind of had like a little bit of Angelina vibes, or like, look at everything I'm doing. I'm so generous with the tribe.
Right. But I think she was trying to make it more like, she said everyone was kind of talking about the vote and I just made dinner. I think she was trying to be like, I'm not part of the politicking, you know, I'm just here making dinner. It's like the food and the dinner was the most important part of the politicking. You know, they're part and parcel of the same thing. But
disingenuous. Like, she was the one who, like, you know, was instrumental. And I feel like but that's exactly my point. It's like, I feel like that kind of thing is exactly what will, like, do her in. It's, you know, this, like, this pretending that she's not playing I'm just making dinner by the shelter, being generous with my tribe mates, when she's really the one who's you know, trying to get her way, or most concerned with getting her way.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on how everyone reacts to that. Like, if she's saying that, but she's also saving all these people, and Pia's probably grateful to her, and Susie's grateful to her, and the other people who don't want to say a name might be grateful to her, then they're kind of happy for her to do her thing. But yeah, I mean, Luke has a clue, which we'll talk about. She definitely made herself kind of an obvious strategist, maybe a bit of a threat in the fact that she was talking to everyone. That, you know, Ingenue's obvious betrayal. She was the only one that they might have counted on to be the vote because she was seen as that six. I don't really know why. I don't know why they kept talking in front of her. I don't know why she seemed like an option to them. But if she is the one who was talking to them and then went against them, she might be upsetting people in a way that someone who's, like, very silent and just kind of in that majority of seven really isn't. So she's making waves, ironically, more than the people who are, like, surfers. She's making waves. Again, I can't fault the execution. I think it was really impressive. I just always think, should you be making, you know, waves on day one, especially of a 50-day game? Like, compared to US Survivor, I always think anyone who's kind of even talked about or, like, brought up in these first couple of votes is not in a good way long term.
Yeah, Survivor is slow at the beginning, even on US Survivor. And, you know, we've certainly seen an Australian Survivor again and again, that it's just that extra 16 days now, obviously shorter, makes such a big difference when there's just, like, no opportunity for those bigger targets and bigger threats to make it all the way to the end. And certainly from the strategic point of view, is the 5 days off the top, which I think is a great decision, because it has seemed like every season it's just kind of like, you know, limped its way home. Do you know anything about that choice?
Well, I think it used to be 26 episodes, and now it's just, you know, a sprightly 24. So I think it might just be like a networking thing. You know, I love it. They were like, 55 days is crazy. We can't be doing that. We'll just do a 50-day thing. So yeah, I mean, look, it is more manageable. 55 days was absolutely insane. But 24 episodes in 50 days is still a lot. Like, I'm struggling. I don't know how the players can deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. The 50-day thing is really, it really is bonkers. I mean, and certainly, like, the last two seasons, and I, you know, only really skimmed the surface of last season, but had a lot more vitality towards the end than the first season. First season, they were just completely gassed out by the end, but it did always seem that, you know, the whack-a-mole just went on that much longer, and, like, the maintaining, you know, that strategic sort of mastery and grip was just not really tenable for the entire time. You know, you couldn't play a super dominant game all the way through in the way that you kind of can with a US Survivor, or at least, you know, you can turn it on a lot earlier in US Survivor. And, you know, so to see people like Steven and like Andy, who are really, you know, in the background right now, and really, like, self-consciously not being, you know, being a forward in their strategy is I guess that's the right choice, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And especially US Survivor now, we see so many alpha games win, pretty much solely alpha games. And it's like, it's 39 days. And then also from, like, day 20, you might have an idol, right? And just consistent idols. So it's really a 20-day game that you have to get through. Whereas, like, we really see the beta style win out in Australian Survivor every single time, because every single time the big dogs get taken out kind of around day 39, actually. Like, you know, you think about like Benji and Matt last season, and then the season before there was just like Henry and then like Luke as well, and Sarah and Tess, and like all the big dogs just went around that time. I mean, Luke actually made it 49 days, which is crazy. You know, in US Survivor, he might win, but it's a really hard game for Australian Survivor to get through to 55 days or to 50 days for like an alpha type player. So I definitely think hanging in the background is really good from the beginning. But in talking about Luke, who is someone I desperately want to talk about, I'm so happy he survived this week. My heart was racing out of my chest every time, you know, his name was brought up in any capacity. You said you had a Survivor nightmare last night. Me too. It was that Luke went home. I think this is my reality now. But I just think he's such an underrated player. Like, I love this week for him. I know he voted incorrectly. It's not his fault. He's not an athlete. Like, what can you do about that? But he still seems to have really good connections with everyone. He's making everyone laugh. I'm sure his energy is just kind of infectious out there. And for him to, you know, find his first ever idol Clue, I think with Luke, we kind of imagine he had idols before because he's like our Tony. He's actually never had a Clue. He's never had an idol. He's now like got this mechanism that he could maybe use. He has relationships with people and a real plan now to bring Abby and Ross over, you know, with him and David to the other side. So did you like what Luke was doing in those two episodes, or was just voting incorrectly so damning?
No, I mean, the only thing I disagreed with what you were saying is that he's an underrated player. I feel like everyone loves Luke. Are the people in your circles? What?
But as a character, I feel like they love Luke. And how can you not? Like, he's one of the best characters of all time. But as a player, I think he's a really good player.
Yeah, he's a really good player. Who's saying he's not, Shannon? We need to like target these people.
Well, Twitter is mean. Twitter is mean. But like, I think I don't know if people are saying he's a bad player, but I just think when you think of Luke, everyone talks about Crazy Luke from the Spy Shack, right? Like, that's what Daisy said. He's completely co-opted Spy Shacks. Like, Australians believe Luke invented the Spy Shack. Like, he took that from Tony flat out, completely.
Does he believe he invented the Spy Shack? Because it, like, the way he talked about it, it's like, I'm building another of my patented Spy Shacks, Spy Shack 2.0. No, this is Spy Shack 4.0.
Yeah, there was spy bunkers. Like, why aren't you doing that? No, you know what? He knows that he was watching Tony YouTube videos before he went out. But like, honestly, if all of Australia is going to believe that he invented that, like, that's good entrepreneurship. Maybe he's learning from Janine that, like, if you steal a good idea, like I did with the chizzy, you should pretend that it's yours, you know?
So, you know, I thought Luke played actually really, really well coming into this game in a really tough position. You know, and I think he had one statement that really resonated with me, which is, you know, I'm not concerned with making these very, you know, superficial relationships. I want to make a couple of really deep relationships. And I actually think, you know, as great as it is to have a 7, it's more important to have a 1. It's more important to have a 4. And, you know, I think that actually I didn't think Luke was in that bad a position. You know, like, yes, he voted the wrong way, but like, you know, the other alliance, the opposing alliance, which, you know, immediately united around this, you know, this criteria that he had no control of, was just bigger than his. You can't fault the guy, you know, and he had no access. You know, it's not like he had no immediate access to that. You know, it was like a pregame alliance in a certain way, you know, and because of the fact that it was based on criteria that were established before the game was ever created. So, I mean, it's obviously there are differences between a pregame alliance and the Sporty Seven. But, you know, Luke didn't really have any like immediate obvious inroads to that. But, you know, I think the fact that he is still his irrepressible self, the fact that he's like really doing a good job of building a couple of relationships and now working on flipping the weaker members of that bigger alliance, I think he's in a great spot. I mean, I was curious to hear what you thought about his choice of David. Now, how does David compare to Jericho? Because obviously in Luke's mind, like, he needs a new Jericho.
Yeah. Well, I love that because I wanted Luke to go out and be like, you have to align with me. My number one ally won the game. Like, he's kind of like the you of Australian Survivor, right, Stephen? Like, I would align with you. You're a very, very good luck charm to winners of your season. So I wanted him to go out and do that. He finds his Jericho, which is David. And I feel like they have a really good kind of intrinsic connection. I've heard that Sarah knows David, you know, Sarah from Luke's season from the modeling world. So that might be something they can bond over, something pretty, pretty minor to bond over, but anything's good. And I think David's actually a few years older than Luke, but he's like more on the younger side with Luke. So they just seem to have like a really good intrinsic bond. As you said, Luke wants to create bonds built on something. So it seems like there's actually value to that. And not just David. If you look at the way that the Friendly Five kind of were following Luke, like, he was literally walking and they were all following him, like physically and also just in the game. You can tell that he's really kind of being a leader out there, but not in a pushy way, like in a necessary way, as in I'm the only former player. So even like strategizing for the challenges, he's like, okay, so kind of taking the lead on that. And I think people appreciate that. Like he brings that feel to the game that they kind of do need. Just the way that he's gone out there and been really likable, I think has been really good. And like, just, he seems really aware. And everyone who listens to my podcast will know that awareness is really key for me. And everything he was saying was correct. I mean, obviously, the clue being in the raft, the fact that he was the only one who thought, you know, there's that survivor experience. He was the only one who thought to go look for that. He did it at night so that he kind of wouldn't be found out. So he still went out and did the fishing, which was the absolute correct social choice, and still got the clue, which was absolutely, you know, having his fish and eating it too. And then he said, you know, you can tell Steve wants to play. You can tell they have a seven. You can tell ET's a natural leader. Like everything he said was on the money. So his awareness is great. I think that the people that he and David have identified to bring over in Abby, who's a bit younger, who seems to really enjoy the flirting with David, in Ross, who is crazy, I can definitely see him working with Luke, because as Luke said, I don't know if it was in a secret scene, but he said what Ross does and surfing those 80 meter waves is makes him a crazy person. So he might want to come over to the dark side. So I think those are two really good options for them. I'm not as worried as I should be about Luke, considering I'm having nightmares that he gets voted out.
Well, I actually was worried. Yeah, because I thought like the way he entered this game, I was very concerned that he would sort of like be an obvious target in the way that Russell was an obvious target. And Luke really played better from the bottom last
season.
That's
a very
right?
low bar, like really damning with fake praise in that sense.
Well, no. But I mean, I was actually hesitant to bring up the Russell comparison because like just in terms of like everyone being like, I got to get out the super big strategist, you know, or even just being, even if it wasn't necessarily a negative thing, you know, for it to be just be a focal thing, you know, that Luke, everyone would be concerned about Luke, even if he were forced into a leadership position. I think that would not be great, but I think Luke is in a really good spot where he's kind of, being an underdog. And I think that's where he's sort of at his best, is like running an insurrection and taking down the top dogs. And it seems like that's what he's going to do again. I mean, the interesting thing about David versus Jericho is that I wonder if there was something about David that made him, Luke was the bigger target, right, with Jericho. And as a result, Jericho won. And I wonder if he wanted someone with David who maybe is a little bit more of a target. You know, David is a huge human being. He obviously has an incredible body. He's very handsome. He's very physical. You know, he's flirtatious. And I wondered if maybe Luke, maybe it was just happenstance, but if I were Luke, I would be thinking like, I want a Jericho who's going to get voted out before I am.
Yeah, it was the one thing that went wrong last time, was just that.
I
do see that. And I think, I mean, look, not a lot of Jericho comparisons on the Champions Tribe for him to choose from if he wanted like just an exact Jericho. I think that's a really good point though. But for, I don't know if anyone's a bigger target than Luke. Just by being Luke. I mean, look how many confessionals he has. The man is just magnetic. I do think, though, that for David, it's someone who, it's a definitely a closer gap. And if you're thinking, okay, who are we getting rid of this pair? With Luke and Jericho, it was definitely Luke every time, you know, 10 times out of 10. With David, you might think, well, he's more likely to win challenges. That's a big thing. And he seems pretty strategic as well. He definitely has some game to him. So I think that's a great point. Look, if David can get taken out and he can come seventh and then Luke could go on to win, I'm here for that story 100%.
I was surprised at how slow the game started, and it reminded me of, and not, you know, of last season, which I, you know, it's always a surprise because actually Australian Survivor Season 2 started pretty
really fast,
quickly. Yeah. And obviously US Survivor starts really fast, but, you know, basically no talk of idols except for from Luke. You know, everyone thought that, you know, the sensible thing to do is vote out the weakest player, you know, with some debate on the contenders tribe with, you know, like, do we vote out the weak person who's just weak, or do we vote out the weak person who is also potentially strategic? You know, and the fact that was even up for debate is like, you know, a little bit shocking. And it was just like, it's such a different vibe than US Survivor. I mean, some of that may obviously be that, you know, certainly there's the length of time. It's probably a cultural thing. It's also probably just a more physical game. I mean, US Survivor challenges are hard, but like, they're not necessarily hard for everyone. You know, I mean, the early challenges in US Survivor, typically, you know, it's taxing, but it's okay for a weaker or smaller person because there's a role that they're going to be involved in. You know, it's like eight people run the physical part and then you get two people on the puzzle. And here, you know, if they didn't have a stacked tribe lifting up those walls, you know, they're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, it's hyper physical. I think as well, like a lot of the marketing, again, marketing to those casuals, you know, you have athletes, so it's going to be like really physical challenges. And all the ads were like the toughest challenge in Australian Survivor history, which is not something I care about at all. Like, that's not something that excites me in terms of the marketing. But for the casuals, they definitely could be excited by that. So I think the physicality of it definitely is important. I also think bigger tribes, you know, you don't start with 12-person tribes in right. the U.S. And when we see these really big merges of 13 or 12 people, I mean, you would know, Stephen, with like the Chaos Cast vote, it kind of can be hard to just kind of get a group. It's actually pretty rare, actually, that this 47 made like such a clear majority. And even then, you know, the friendly five had to turn on each other and it became like a 9-3 vote. So I feel like it's really hard to just kind of get two groups against each other, which you might be able to do in a smaller group. And then what we saw from the contenders, which we'll talk about as well, it was basically just like this big mass and like voting out between two of the weakest. I feel like we see that in big merge tribes in the US all the time. So I definitely think, you know, you don't want to be the first one out is the first thing. You have a really big tribe. You have a really physical game. You have a very long game. Like, it makes sense that people are just trying to throw the weak people under the bus and just survive till maybe a swap.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. You know, and you're right. Like, it's like an easy thing to build a consensus around, whereas questions of, you know, who's schemey, who's got too many, you know, who's too friendly with too many people becomes a little bit more challenging.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's basically a lot of what we have to talk about for the champions. I wanted to credit Pia a little bit for saving herself, even though I mostly do credit Nova and the show did credit Nova, but her edgic must be through the roof. You know, now that you're on the Australian Survivor podcast, you're allowed to talk about edit here, Stephen.
So, oh my God. Yeah, really?
Welcome.
So exciting. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Pia had a confessional saying she was going to be first out or winning. And I was like, I get the first part of that for me, but you know, I wouldn't get the winning part, but look, she's definitely kind of become like a champion through that first episode.
Oh, so who's got the best edits it's something I've like forced myself to stop watching for. And now I feel like I'm stretching my legs a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you're on a diet and I've like just finally offered you ice cream and you're like, if I eat that, I'll throw up. Like I can't just consume that right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's so fun. Yeah. I also really like Janine. I felt like she put herself in a good spot, not necessarily editing wise, but, you know, in terms of her strategy, she seems to be in a really good place where everyone really likes her. But she's not one of the forerunners.
Yeah. My favorite thing about Janine, and you wouldn't know this cause you're not watching the episodes on Australian TV, but every single ad break, there is an ad for Boost Juice, which is her company. And she's talking about Boost Juice and her journey. So like, she didn't get very many confessionals in the actual episode, but if you count really in the ads, she got like, she's winning on edgic. If you count in the ads, like she's 100%. She bought her own airtime. This is next level strategy to me.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Yeah, that's a little more challenging to pull off on CBS, but you know, definitely something for future contestants to think about.
Yeah, and the other thing with the champions tribe, which we have to talk about, is Ross's snoring. I'm now like retroactively impressed that Ross wasn't voted out at that first tribal council, considering how he snores. Like now, I'm like, you must be amazing at this game if they kept you around with that.
I couldn't handle that for like the 30 seconds of screen time. Like I cannot imagine trying to sleep. And also like when you're out there, like, you know, it's not just like you're trying to sleep. You're thinking, oh my God, if I can't go to sleep, I'm not going to be able to perform in the challenge tomorrow. Like I'm not going to be able to do this. Like the whole show, you know, we're going to lose. The whole thing is going to fall apart. It's just like I'm not going to be able to strategize. Like sleep is such an important part of the experience out there. And it's such a precious thing. So for someone who's as disruptive to sleep to survive, you're right, is pretty impressive.
Sleep is important to me now in my life. Like if you were to take that sleep from me literally today where I have like literally nothing to do, I will vote you out of my life. So that's why it's so impressive to me that they didn't vote him out.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
Well, he's probably going to win because Shane Gould, who won last season, had like a long-term farting storyline. So if Ross can kind of follow in those footsteps, then I think he will be the winner.
Yeah. All right. You've called it here. Calling it here first.
Well, yeah, my actual winner pick was Abby. We'll talk. I feel better about that than the Ross pick. But the contenders, which we want to talk about. You know, this is kind of, it's indicative of the week of the show. We barely saw them in the first episode. We haven't really spoken about them in the first, you know, half an hour or so of this podcast. But now we're going to talk, except Andy, which really does fit. But we're going to talk about the contenders. Because, yeah, the first episode, There wasn't a lot there. And kind of even in the second episode, we didn't really get to see any huge tribe dynamics because it was just basically this one mass of people voting, as you said, between like the two weaker players. So that's a bit unfortunate because it means, you know, at least with the champions, when it's 7-5, you can kind of place everyone and get to know people within the context that they're in the tribe. Whereas now there's still a few like contenders, especially a lot of the women who don't have confessionals and who are basically just part of this giant contenders blob. So I didn't love that. But what did you think about the dynamics that we saw from the contenders?
Yeah, I mean, look, I sort of like the way they introduce people, like kind of like waiting until they have a moment in the story where they're relevant and then doing the whole backstory thing. You know, they haven't, I guess they used to do something similar to that, right? They used to do something similar to that in the early seasons of US Survivor. And they, you know, they still do that in other TV shows. I used to think it was corny, but I actually kind of dig it the way they do it now. I mean, the one thing that I don't love is when they have like someone speaking to a conference room and like saying generic conference room things like
yes, Laura.
Let's talk about Out of Africa or Laura talking about.
I need those spreadsheets right now. And she just has graphs in the background. That makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah, obviously there's nobody like who's like learning these lessons from them. You know, this is like just purely for the cameras.
Yeah,
and it's like so
the
cringe.
Camera and it's just like a bare room.
Oh, definitely. 100%. Definitely. But like then when it's like Matt in the wrestling ring, I thought that was super cool. And I actually like I really liked Sarah's moment where she was, you know, had her vacuum. I mean, and then it cut to the, you know, the footage of the tidal wave. Yeah, I mean, it was just like I thought they did a really cool job of kind of bringing people in when they were relevant. Obviously, they did not bring enough people in. And you're right, specifically the women on the contenders tribe. There are a few who I am having some trouble identifying.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a cast photo and I'm not totally sure who everybody is.
Yeah, my fiance in particular, every single time he sees Casey, he's like, who's that? I'm like, it's Casey. The next, who's that? It's still Casey. Like she, I think she's like the one. Maybe she has like a generic looking face, but he just never knows who she is. And I can totally see that.
Well, Casey was the one who was bossy about the shelter, yes. Right?
That's her, been her only edit. So edgy wise, yeah. Not great. See, we're diving back into the edit, but not great.
But yeah, it was, you know, it was interesting on the contenders tribe, like how much strategic credit Andy got for everything, even though as far as we saw, he didn't actually do anything strategic. And I mean, I thought that was to his credit that, you know, he didn't do anything strategic. Like we're talking about the tall poppy syndrome where, you know, you really want to be in the background. And, you know, we've seen so many fans, you know, myself included, come out of the gate too fast. And to have that self-restraint is so hard. You know, when you've been waiting to play, you know, certainly for years to get cast, you know, the casting process, you know, you're at, you know, your pregame doing, you know, your pregame preparation for months. And then you just like, and then it's like, go. And you're like, I'm not even allowed to talk strategy with anybody. It's very frustrating. So, you know, I have so much respect and kudos for Andy in that context, you know, and for the way that he is trying to sort of shape strategy without having too heavy a hand. But we really, you know, for all that he was like a wonderful narrator of the episode or of both episodes, we really did not see him doing anything strategic.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really liked what he was doing behind the scenes. I love the strategy, as you said, of not being strategic. And it took me by surprise because, like, compared to Harry, who also says that he's a fan, and as we said, everyone thinks they're a super fan, but they're the two who really came out saying they were fans. And preseason, I thought, okay, I feel really good about Harry because Andy's going to come out and overplay and, you know, do too much. And he looks so strategic in a, like with his visor that, in a way that just like Harry
does.
Is doesn't.
The visor a strategic look? The visor to me does not. I thought that was part of his strength. The visor is kind of like, I'm a golf guy. You know, it's like, I'm like, here to like.
Too much on the nose. Like, I want you to think I'm a golf guy. That's strategic, right?
Shorts. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, but Harry. Really, I thought that he was going to be the one who would kind of make moves when he needed to later and kind of blend in the beginning. Again, every time I say blend in with Harry, it's never an ice cream joke. But I was surprised that in this vote where it was really Andy and Harry leading it, you know, Andy, my favorite thing he said in the whole two episodes where we heard a lot from him was he was like, I want Harry to go forth and take the bullets. And that's the strategy in and of itself. And then Harry goes and does do that. And I was just surprised by the duality, because if you would have told me before, you know, pick one of Andy and Harry, which one is going to be out there making the moves day one and which one is going to be kind of orchestrating it from the background, I never would have said it, you know, that Harry was at the front and Andy was behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. It really, I think he's doing awesome so far, because he's also like he's a pretty big guy. I mean, he's like a big individual, and I didn't realize when I've met him, like just how muscular he is as well. And, you know, he does sort of physically stand out with the golf cap, which I think is like, honestly, it's one of my favorite, like iconic fashion choices of any Survivor. Yeah, I've never seen like a golf visor or a visor of any variety before. It's just like such a fun, distinctive, great fashion choice. So, you know, definitely getting, you know, Chizzy points. Is that what we're saying?
Yes,
Chizzy?
The Chizzy has okay. A theme song. We'll get to it later. I'm really excited about you doing the Chizzy. But yeah, I mean, I really liked a lot of what Andy was doing. To talk about what I didn't like about what he was doing, he comes in and he says he's a freelance writer. And, you know, he's a poker player. He doesn't have to mention that he's a poker player. He's an advertising executive. To just say that you're in ads. Like, for me, I really don't think that he needed to lie about his profession. I'm kind of on the side of, you never really need to lie about your profession unless it's, like, really necessary. Like, I can't even think about what career that would be necessary for. Like, maybe, like literally, like, a contract killer. Like, probably don't go out and say that. But otherwise, like, the lawyers of the world, just go out and say it, because to me, we've talked about 50-day game. It's social. You want to be genuine with people. You want to tell them who you really are, what your day looks like. And to have that barrier of having to lie about every single thing, it better be really worth it. Is advertising executive really worth it? You know, are people going to think you're like Don Draper out there, that they don't want to work with you? Like, just say that you're in ads. So I didn't love this, but I'm interested to hear you, the Andy expert who has met him. Do you finally disagree with me on this point?
Well, no, I mean, I feel like this has been something I've been saying for years, Shed. And so that like people lie unnecessarily. I mean, you know, we've all been saying it, right? That you don't really need to lie about your profession, and that it creates distrust. I feel like I was talking about Russell in season 19. Like, he didn't need to lie about, you know, what he did, because you're immediately creating, like you said, you're creating a barrier with people. You're not going to be able to, you know, and there will always seem to be something fake. That said, Andy does not seem to be having this problem. I'm always going to be an Andy defender. you know, whatever criticisms you have, I will refute. So if you want to find points of difference between us, that might be the place. But he didn't seem to be having that issue. In fact, he seemed to be really naturally gelling with everyone. I mean, he's a really charming guy. And I think that, you know, so I agree, charming over a week, like, you know, 50 days later, like, what are you, you know, how much are you sharing about your work? I, though, in my two seasons of Survivor, did not speak that much about my job, you know, like, right. It ends up like not being. And I think it's like, you know, he's a golfer, you know, claiming he's a golf writer, you know, that he obviously has familiarity with. It doesn't get that specific unless, you know, it's something really interesting. You know, like, obviously we'd ask the firefighters about their day firefighting. You know, we'd talk to JT about cattle ranching, but for like the lawyers and the marketing people, there wasn't that much specificity that came into it. Now, is there any real, you know, loss to just saying you're a marketing executive? No, but you know, like, if that's where he wants to have his fun, is like being deceptive there instead of overplaying in the strategy part of the game, I, you know, go forth and lie.
Yeah, I mean, maybe people want to know about the spreadsheets, but yeah, I guess to me it's crazy that it doesn't get specific, because you have so much time out there. Like, surely you talk about everything. So that is crazy to me, like, obviously not having played the game. To me, it's just more like you're then self-censoring every single thing you say, so that you're not just, you know, when you're
right,
tired,
so you're
and
not,
hungry,
like, feeling something accidental.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, just
that's,
like,
that is really the problem.
Yeah, so that for me is the biggest thing, especially when it's like so unnecessary for marketing executives. We, you know, Australian Survivor's never been immune to it, just like US Survivor. I remember Evan in season 1 didn't want to tell people he was a drama teacher. I love Evan, but it still boggles the mind that that was something that needed to be lied about. Yeah, so I just
that's always funny when it's like something like so. Yeah, I mean, that is probably the best example when it's like something so completely absurd. You know, like, yeah, where like, you can see like Tony not wanting to say he's a cop, but then someone, you know, like you said, not like lying about being a drama teacher. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, Hannah, who's one of the nameless faceless women on the Contenders tribe, is actually a cop, and she said in her preseason press that she's going to lie about it, which I also really don't think is necessary, just because Cops don't even really have a stigma in Australia, even compared to the US. And look, people who lie about the profession aren't really going out there and winning Survivor, especially not the longer game. I know Tony did, but if your defense is, well, Tony did it, then you're doing the wrong thing, because only Tony can do things. Maybe Tony Luke, can do it. Maybe Tony Luke. Yeah. But he's a unicorn. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about this, but yeah, you didn't need to lie about your job. But I do agree that if it's the way he's getting out his strategy energy, and that's a good thing. If the reason Andy could step back and let Harry take the bullets is because he's like, but I'm playing a devious game, they all think I'm a golf blogger, then like, okay, sure, you've saved yourself from yourself. So like, good on you for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Like he's performing like perfectly in the bigger picture stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the bigger picture we need to talk about, because it was this battle of the Goliaths, Laura versus Baden. And I feel like people really connected to Baden early, so it actually was like there was a lot of stress for me, because I really didn't want Baden to go. You know, we got a lot of questions, Stephen. He was chopping that log. People were getting a lot of Stephen Fishbag vibes. Like, did you connect to Baden as much as I do? Because I love that guy.
He kind of reminded me of Bradley.
Right.
Doesn't he kind of
people
look like
are saying
Bradley
you
from Ghost Island? Oh.
But like a younger, nicer Bradley.
He looks yes, a lot like Bradley from Ghost Island. I did like Baden, but he was so antisocial, A. B, like the whole thing, like, I'm doing this for everyone who's felt, like, come on, like, don't, you know, calm down. Okay, you're not playing for all the nerds out there. You're playing for yourself.
I'm a Baden defender, so maybe this is where we'll disagree. And you know what?
He said he was
playing for the nerds, and I'm a nerd, and I feel like he is playing for me. He's my representative.
He's not playing for you. That's not you out there. That's some other dude.
No, it's me. I'm telling you. I can see it. I'm very invested in winning.
I did like him, but... And you know, obviously you want someone like that who's a, you know, obviously incredibly intellectual. You want them to have like a fighting chance. But you know, he did not look, and we've all made mistakes on Survivor, right?
me too, because I'm Baden and he's made some mistakes last night.
Yeah, exactly. You who are 100% represented by Baden. You don't find that sort of like, I'm playing, like, you're not, your inspirational story about being socially awkward is not that inspirational. Like, calm down.
I was inspired.
You were inspired. I did like Baden a lot. But not as much as I wanted to like Baden, you know, because normally my heart really does go out to the people in that situation. And obviously I have been the people in that situation.
You were me. You represented me. You played for me.
Yeah. See, I needed more inspirational quotes about how I was playing for all of the, I don't know.
Nerds.
Right.
Yeah, there awkward nerds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awkward nerds. And you know, he really did give his all in the challenges, and really, really did sort of like put it all out there. And it's so hard. It's so hard too, you know, like, and I can imagine like on even more so on Australian Survivor, when you go out there and you're on a tribe and like, you just don't connect with people. And, you know, like you want to find that person you connect with. And, you know, that quote he had early in the episode, and here I'm speaking more sincerely because I really did like Baden. You know, he had that quote early in the episode about, you know, like, I just haven't found my like friend out here. And I, you know, I think I really felt that for sure in the early days of Cambodia. But we didn't see him, and maybe it's an airtime issue. Like, we didn't see him like trying to find that person.
Yeah. And then, but it's chicken or the egg for me, because it's like, you come out there and you're so in your head, and he's not connecting with anyone, and then he just never does. You know, like, if you kind of maybe get it off from the get-go that you don't have someone that you can connect with, then, you know, that prohibits you from, I guess, really trying. And of course, he should have been more extroverted. Like, you know, Survivor's not an introvert's game. So he comes out there and he says he's doing it for the introverts. Like, I would never, ever recommend that on the show strategically. Like, it might be why I don't go on the show. But of course, social capital and social skills are the biggest thing you want in the game. So, you know, he admits that he doesn't have that, but he did offer himself to people in other ways. And, you know, you see, compared to Laura, who he's against, people thought that, you know, he offered himself to them as basically a vote they can use, and that was good enough for them. So he, you know, he showed his value, I guess, in ways that were enough to save him. His speech you may not have been inspired by, but everyone else seemed to really be digging it. Even Maddie said on Twitter that, like, it reminded him of his students and stuff. So he's earnest in a way Bradley could never, ever, ever be. Obviously, that's a really big difference. But I think that he kind of did appeal to people there. So I'm interested to see if that kind of foothold in the social game kind of allows him to build some bonds.
I want to push back on the idea that he offered himself to people, because, you know, Andy specifically said Baden is not talking strategy with me. And then there's a scene of Andy like trying to talk to Baden, and Baden just like, you know, basically shutting it down. Right. Where he's like, you know, well, I'm surprised there aren't more super fans here. And like, you know, kind of like trying to engage strategically. And Baden's like, yeah, a lot of seasons. You know.
Yeah, like, I love that response. He was basically like, pretty much impossible to have watched all that content. Like, I, so you, yeah, how, no one's a super fan. Like, it would be impossible.
He's shaming you. He's shaming you for your passions.
I'm used to that. I get it a lot. But yeah, no, you may be right. I think, you know, the X interviews are coming up, so there's like a weird order to do it. But I think Laura kind of felt maybe that he was more offering himself up as a number than her. But I do think it might have been a case of Laura doing more wrong than Baden doing things right. Because as you said, you know, at the beginning of the show, they're both the weaker players as much as the tribe are seeing it in terms of brute strength. And at least Baden is like not a threat. Like, Laura seemed like a strategic threat who was kind of trying to get some numbers together, and she's not going to help you in the challenges. It's like, why would you keep that person around? So I thought that was threatening. And I also thought it was interesting in terms of the gender divide, maybe, that she was trying to get some of the girls together. And Harry even says a couple of times, like, the boys are going this way. And he was worried about, like, the women kind of getting something together. So if Andy and Harry are the main people trying to keep Baden, I think that was definitely something on their mind.
Right, right. The nebulous Women's Alliance, which in like, you know, X number of seasons of Survivor across like, you know, every continent has like manifested twice.
Because Black Widows are definitely something that is something to be concerned about.
Yeah, the Black Widows in season 16, and then the, you know, Kim's Alliance in season 24, and then that's pretty much it. But yet, every season, everywhere, it's like, we got to stop those women from teaming up on us. It's really it's pretty crazy.
To be fair, yeah, though, we did see Laura talking to Casey about getting together with like the other women, so it wasn't right. That wrong. With no power, though. So yeah.
Yeah, I look, just to close out with the Baden thing, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on him because, you know, the other thing is like, you are two different people when you are with people that you, you know, like and who respect you and you feel comfortable being around. And then you are versus when you are with people who you just don't connect with, who you kind of feel targeted by, you know, like you can't ever be your best self when you're with the people who you feel ostracized from. I mean, I had that experience myself playing in Cambodia. Like, I was like super extra awkward, you know, even more awkward than I normally am in the early days of Bion because I knew that I was on the outs. But then as soon as I was with a group of people who I was in with, like suddenly I just like felt like I was a different human being. And I'm sure that will happen with Baden. And I'm really hopeful that we get to see him like go further and like actually get the chance to like prove himself to people as, you know, with these skills.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Baden that the people on the other side are like the sporty seven of ex-athletes.
Even more so.
Like, yeah, where exactly are his people on the season? And that does concern me. So I think it has to be mostly the people he's with. But now they might get him more because of the speech.
I feel like Luke might be into it, too, you know, like where he kind of like he willing to align with people who are a little less right outside the mainstream of Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, Luke can already have so many sheep, but I definitely see that. It just depends. If it keeps going in this like hyper physical, over strategic way, then I don't feel great for Baden. But I think he did a good job of basically just like playing dead, you know, like Laura didn't. Laura had some fight in her and that was threatening, and Baden didn't. And that was a really good thing. So, you know, he appealed to people on a more social, emotional level rather than being like a strategic threat. And you know what? The system works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Like, was that the right choice to keep him and vote out Laura?
Well, in terms of the people who are making the decisions in Harry and Andy, I do think yes, because as we've said, I mean, like Harry and Laura seem to have no love lost between them. So I don't know why he would keep her around. And yeah, I mean, Baden might be grateful to them and be a number for them. So I don't see any problem with that. Maddie was the one really trying to keep Laura, and it really did seem like very much a physical thing. Which, again, long-term in the game, I don't know if it's that important, especially when it's, like, between Laura and Baden, like, much of a muchness. So, for the people in the power positions, I think definitely yes. For, like, the women and stuff who seem to be connecting more closely with Laura, I think they lost a little bit of power. But, again, it's, like, it's the first vote if you're just trying to kind of get through it before there are real dynamics in place. I think it did make sense as just, like, a communal vote.
Yeah, speaking of iconic headwear, Laura really suffered for having her, like, her hat What did they say? It was like a mafioso hat or something, mob boss hat or something, like a pan. It's like just like this, like Panama hat.
The progression of headwear in Survivor is really just something to be admired.
When you go out to play, what is your headwear going to be?
I was never going to play Survivor before, and I'm definitely never going to play now that literally a tribe of athletes is like the majority in a tribe. But headwear, I don't know, maybe flower crown. I think that's something we haven't seen. I want to do something no one's ever seen, you know, and something that no one could think of me as a mob boss. Something very unthreatening.
Viking horns might be a cool way to do it.
Yeah, if you can just go out there with like the craziest headwear, people will probably just leave you alone. Like, are they going to vote out the person in the wizard's hat first? Probably, actually. definitely yes.
Oh my god, I'm totally blanking on her name. Oh my god, I'm only thinking of her Instagram handle. What's her name? Who plays Quidditch was on Australian Survivor season two. Didn't she have like a wizard's hat?
Tessa.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, she had a Harry Potter hat. Which is good. Yes. I would go out there with like some type of like fandom hat, because then if you get, everyone loves Harry Potter. Now you're talking about Harry Potter. Solved it.
Yeah. What about a beret? Do you think that works for you or against you?
And then you just pretend to be French the whole time? Or like, why are you wearing the beret?
You just have like sort of a Gallic charm to you. You know, you like you kind of like adopt a sort of, you know, like French swagger.
I'm trying to think about what this title should be called. Like, is it, it's hat strategy, but like, see, this is why I need Mike Bloom. Is it strategy? Strategy? Like, I don't know. Mike, that's, help me.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was trying to figure out what the if Baden is sort of Bradley-esque, like, is he like Bradlaws, Brosden? I couldn't come up with that. I was working at that one as well.
That's an insult to Baden. Like, I get it from an aesthetic point of view, but really.
Just purely physically. Yeah, purely physical. Yeah. And I like Brad. I like them both. I like all of my my skinny nerds.
Yeah, skinny nerds for the win. They represent us all. The other thing from the contenders that I thought was worth mentioning was that they found beans. I loved this as in terms of, you know, that's a really random thing to say. They literally were like, well, we found some beans, which, I mean, I don't feel like beans are native to Fiji, but I actually watched the premiere episode with Sean, who was on, you know, came second on last year's season at a premiere viewing party in Melbourne, which was so fun. And she was saying that the champions and contenders were on like opposite beaches from last year. So I was like, oh, the contenders on your beach. Did you leave them beans? Because this is like the only place in the world where you could like maybe find beans, because there are so many reality shows being filmed in Fiji that like any show could leave beans behind, you know?
Right. Yeah. Wait, so what was the verdict? What did she say?
She was like, I don't think that we did. So I think maybe they were given the beans is what it is. But you know what? If it was from the former champions, then I think that would be because, you know, that's the reason they were all getting sick, because they were eating these like 10-month-old beans.
Yeah, that's definitely it. The beans that like had survived on this island for a year, just waiting to be picked up by this group. That was a weird choice. Like if they were given beans, like why give it to them on day three or whatever?
And why have the confessional where they're like, we found beans? Like, it's fine to give them beans. It's fine. Like, no one would have second guessed it. But definitely at the premiere viewing party I was at, when they said we found beans, everyone was like, that's a strange thing to say and have us just kind of take it.
Maybe they just found them at camp. Like you know, they were left some supplies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We need. I should have asked Laura in the exit interview about the beans, but that's done. So spoiler alert for the exit interview. We don't talk about the beans. I do want to talk more about just some of the other characters we maybe haven't gotten to. My winner pick, as I said, was Abby, the AFL women's player who is now flirting with Dave. And like, look, I don't hate it. I mean, she's the one who's kind of like between the two alliances now. She's got some options. I picked her because I liked that she was a champion who I think, you know, they're going to win out, because we've got so much champion content preseason. And then I like, you know, women and beta players tend to do well in Australian Survivor, so I wanted to pick a girl. And then she's also really sporty, which I thought would kind of go with the theme of the season, which panned out. So look, I'm liking Abby right now.
Yeah, I really liked Abby. I mean, definitely does not have a winner's edit, right? Who knows? Did you feel like she did? Oh,
no,
you
felt like... Not compared to like the peers of the world who were like, I'm going to win. But in
well, the
terms
winner,
of
that winner quote was a little like, that winner, I feel like you can't even like, that winner quote is so on the nose that you can't possibly be real.
That's true. Oh, I love that you're getting back into the edit talk, Stephen. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I really liked Abby. She was great. John, I really liked his mustache. Yeah. You know, that was a highlight of the show for me.
What to make of John? What can you say about John from these two episodes of content that I didn't know about in preseason, which was not very much? He has a mullet. He has a mustache. He's incredibly Australian, and he says bloody oath. Can you give me anything more on John?
He's got moxie.
Is John going to play Survivor? Like, are we getting that confessional in a few episodes' time where he's like, oh, mate, I can't do an Australian accent. I'm not even going to try. But, like, is he playing the strategic game? I'd love to be proven wrong. I don't see it right now.
But this was a very strategy-light episode. And I guess, you know, in terms of, or the second episode was very strategy-light. It was basically, you know, again, like much, a lot of Andy. And sadly, Andy's definitely not getting a winner's edit, right? There's like too much Andy.
It's because the person who lies about being a golf blogger doesn't win Survivor. I'm sorry, Andy.
Yeah. But like, yeah, if only you had told the truth about your job, you would have won.
If only you were the kind of person who could not have to lie about their job. That's what it is. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you got to overplay. He'll be a great character, and he's going home mid-merge.
Yeah, I think late merge, mid merge to late merge. I agree. But like, we've got Andy for, we'll get to cherish him for a long time. But there wasn't that much. I mean, there was like him. There was Harry, right? Sort of like basically executing the strategy that Andy wanted. Also, I mean, it did not seem, to Harry's credit, it did not seem like Andy just put the bug in his ear and Harry ran with it. It seemed like this was Harry's desire as well. You know, we got Matt. We got Laura, but you know, from the big mass of the rest of the contestants, we didn't really get that much strategy as it was. So I have hope for John. Like, I don't think we heard a word from Sarah.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah is someone who's really interesting to me because she was my first boot pick, and that was like a really conventional pick. I think I heard she was like pretty much last in all the drafts, and I was like, prove us wrong. And I feel like from the first two episodes, hearing very little from her, She did prove me wrong. Like, she wasn't in this conversation of like the weakest to go home, despite being like older than every single person. And even when Harry says to Laura that she's like the decoy boot, like Laura can't even believe that. So how well integrated must she be to not even be a believable decoy boot? So in the fact that I thought she was going home first, she definitely, you know, surpassed those low expectations.
Yeah, no, I thought she was, I wanted more from her because of that crazy, you know, she really resonated with me with her job being a cleaner. I thought like, that's an interesting kind of job as someone who might really do well on the show. And then also that story about her surviving that typhoon.
It was tsunami.
I was sad to not get more of her, but yeah, I agree. You know, she was not part of the conversation, which is, you know, great for her.
Yeah, I think that she did pretty well. There's a kind of a lot of people where I just don't feel like I know that much about them on the contenders. Even like Daisy, who's clearly meant to be a really big character, she got like that first kind of intro package. We go back and hear from her quite a lot compared to the other contenders. Yeah. And I'm still like, but who are you? You know, give me one definable trait about you that isn't just like calling the champions old, which we see from her a lot.
right, they keep going back to her for that. Yeah, and I'm actually like struggling to remember anything about Hannah and Samantha.
Yeah, Sammy. Yeah, we heard nothing from those two people. There's only a few people who haven't got intro packages now. I think just Simon Black on the Champions, and then just I think like Sean Hampson and a couple of those girls on the Contenders tribe. So we'll get it. You know, Benji from last season, he got his intro package in episode 7, and then he went on to have the most confessionals of the season. So I feel like it's actually more of like a spoiler in the fact that like, if you haven't heard their intro package and if you haven't heard from them, they're not going to go home. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to hear from them before they go home. So they're actually safe for a while because you might be getting that intro package, you know, in episode 8, and then at least they're making it to episode 8.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I really liked Sneaky Steve in terms of the people I'm really liking. The fact that he came out and was like, look, I'm not in good shape. And yes, I did get very lucky in winning that, you know, gold medal. But at the same time, I put in the effort to do that. And it just kind of showed like, sometimes it looks like you're not doing anything, but there's extreme strategy behind that. So it became a really good allegory, I thought, for, you know, Sneaky Steve Bradbury.
Oh, yeah. Having everyone wipe out and therefore winning the season is basically how Australian Survivor is won. Right. Like,
everyone
just wipes out like that. Like, that is his path to winning this show. I really liked him, too. Is that a thing you knew? What a crazy thing to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's a meme in Australia, so everyone knows that happened. But in doing the preseason research, I found that it was even more amazing. You know, Liana Boris watched two Steve Bradbury documentaries, watched preseason podcast, and like, it's, people have been messaging me a lot because we were talking about in the preseason podcast saying people wipe out all the time in short, you know, short speed skating, and that happens all the time, so it's not that cool. I'm like, well, it must be kind of cool because it's a meme in Australia, and he was on stamps because of it, so, and there were so many documentaries about him, so I know it's a big deal. You know, even if it happens a lot, it must be like iconic for a reason. And you know, he also,
wow, he was on stamps.
Yeah, he was on stamps.
That's really cool. Great. That's like a level of status I've never even heard of. I mean, like, who's on stamps?
Australian stamps. That's one of the, pretty meaningless.
Still, that's one of the coolest like achievements that I've ever heard of.
Yeah. So I mean, it's really an amazing story. You should watch the documentaries. Like, he qualified because someone else got disqualified originally, even to get in. Then people wiped out in the semifinal as well, and in the final. Like, it's really amazing. Like, in terms of the long game of skating, it was amazing. So he's seen from experience. He's looking at ET being like, you're going to wipe out, I'm going to skate to the end and win. It's a really good strategy, and it'll be brought up on every podcast because it's impossible not to talk about it because it's so apt for Australian survivor strategy.
Yeah. I like Susie a lot.
Yeah. Well, what did you see in Susie? Because we didn't really hear about her in the first episode, but she's done amazing things. She's got a huge story. She swam from like Mexico to Cuba. That makes me feel bad about myself.
Yeah, she's got grit. She's got determination. You know, she's got moxie like John. I really like that. These challenges, by the way, are awesome. Like, I loved that pole pushing challenge.
Yes, that was the coolest one. I mean, look, I don't need so many brute strength challenges, but that was at least like a really cool, again, like grit and determination challenge that we haven't really seen before. So that was my favorite of the challenges that we saw.
Yeah, it reminded me of, I mean, it's basically the exact same as a challenge from MTV's The Challenge, which is one of my favorite shows. And I like it partially because it has really like fun, cool, interesting challenges. So I was into it. I dug it. I dig the super physical challenges. I actually, like, I don't care about, you know, some of the ball balancing challenges, but like when it's, you know, really a test of will, like that is interesting to see to me.
Yeah, what challenges do I care about? I guess I also don't really care about ball bouncing. I might not care about the challenges. You know what? Now I'm kind of realizing it about myself. Like, I'd rather see the camp life, but you know, I thought that reward challenge was really cool, but the first reward challenge of wrestling, I thought was like a little underwhelming. I mean, you're just wrestling for a bag. Like, that's not that epic a way to start. And just like Maddie, the way that he's been behaving, like, A, on the show, and B, on social media, just, like, digging into how he, like, beat Luke. It's like you beat him in a wrestling competition, and you were a wrestler. Like, you should beat him. It would be worrying if you didn't beat him. So is it a shtick from Maddie, or is this him? Because if it's him, I don't vibe with it. If it's a shtick, it's like, well, I guess you're putting it on. So, I don't know, it's just so arrogant, and the way he is against the champions, and, like, not my vibe, really not my vibe.
I couldn't tell. I mean, I thought when he was talking to Harry and he was like, why are you coming out of this so strong? Like, why are you like going so hard on the first vote? I thought that was a pretty good point.
Yeah.
But then at Tribal Council, when, like I was saying earlier, like when he was so vocal at Tribal Council that he, you know, he clearly made it, he made it clear to everyone that he thought they were doing the wrong thing, right? I mean, he everything he said kind of like suggested there's weak people and they're weak and we don't like them. And he didn't say Baden by name, but he certainly made, you know, so that just alienates Baden a lot. And it alienates everyone else in his tribe who, like, when he kind of seems like petulant about the choice they made. So,
Especially when he knew Laura was going, and they even showed his confessional, which was a weird editorial choice, I thought, because otherwise my heart would have been beating for Baden. But because I had seen Andy throw a decoy vote at Baden and tell us that it was just for insurance, and because I had seen Maddie vote for Laura and be like, I'm sorry, I couldn't save you, I was like, well, Laura's going home. Why would they ruin that for us? And then still the dramatic music, but it wasn't dramatic because they told us who was going.
Yeah, that was weird. Although I actually, I'm not necessarily always a fan of, like, is it A or is it B as like
you
a kind
watch
of narrative
South African
strategy?
Survivor, because they don't even.
Yeah, try. Really.
Yeah, no, in That's a good great. Way. It's very different.
Well, because like sometimes it's interesting to tell tell the story of why someone goes home, and like without, you know, and removing that sort of obligation to have that question of like, you know, which one of the two of them is it, like can make a really more dramatic and interesting narrative.
But it was the whole edit was which one is it until like the last second where they were like right before the vote, it's Laura.
So, but I don't think it would have been clear who, I mean, they made it seem so much. And again, like, you know, we have to restructure the whole episode, but they made it seem so much like it was Baden until that point that if it wasn't, it would have just like, it wouldn't have been surprising. It would have been nonsensical, you know?
The great thing about Australian Survivor is that they sometimes give the voting confessionals during the final word. So I think that would have been a better place for it. They still could have explained it, but it wouldn't have been, you know, ruining the vote 30 seconds before the votes were actually read.
Yeah, okay, that's a really good point that it would have suddenly given us the context. Mm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was a weird one. But anyway.
But there was some drama to the way they did it, where they like pulled back and you have him like, I don't think you should go, and you're like, what? And then it like pivots around and he's holding up Laura's name and like, oh my god, what a surprise. So like that was really the dramatic moment of the episode, as opposed to the actual, like, that was the vote reveal.
Yeah, but then at least dispense with the like extremely dramatic music during the actual vote reading, which I know, you know, like asking Australian Survivor to do that is like asking like a bird not to fly. Like, they're gonna do the dramatic music. But let's talk about something that is very important, Stephen, because, okay, you know, you have the fishy, and that's great. And we have, so I made the Chizzy Award based on Matt Chisholm, the host of New Zealand Survivor, kind of to, you know, be in the fishy's domain. But then it evolved. And now what do with the Chizzy is we give points. Again, Henry from Australian Survivor gave me this idea live on air and I stole it from him. And it's a great method. So before we get to that, let's play the Chizzy theme song. Take it away. Oh, wow. Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of Chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right. So the Chizzy is here. We're going to give 3 points to the best player, 2 points to the second best player of the week, and 1 point to the third best player. And because it's two episodes as well, it's really hard. You got to fight for those Chizzy points. So
is this a debate? Like, it's you and me, we're kind of like, or do we each get our own separate Chizzy points?
Right. We each get points. So basically what it's based on is in Australian sport, like AFL, the umpires each give, you know, 3 points to the best player, 2 points to the second best, and one to the best player of each game. And at the end, all the votes are tallied and like the best player of the season wins the Brownlow medal, which actually Simon Black did win. So he could be the first person to win the Brownlow and the Chizzy. That would really excite me, but I don't actually see it happening.
The bifecta.
Yeah.
That's really, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it for Simon, but I mean, maybe we should rig it because that would be cool. But
who knows? Like you said, Benji.
yeah, it's true. It's very, very true. I don't know if Benji actually think was pretty close in terms of the points last year. You know, Nick did it with the Danzy, but I've made the Chizzy kind of just like a general term. We use it for Survivor South Africa, we use it here. New Zealand Survivor doesn't exist anymore, and yet the Chizzy lives on. I love it so much. All right, well, I'll give my points, Stephen, and then you can give your points. And also, I give some honorable mentions. It's a very long and complex segment. Plus, there are spreadsheets on Twitter. This goes so deep. You have no idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm honored to be participating in this.
Yes. You should make the fishy. You can take the Chizzy points. You can steal it from me and Henry. Like, I really believe that.
Definitely don't want to add more complexity.
I can get you someone. My brother/intern Jason will make you Chizzy charts or fishy charts. You won't have to do any of the work. Anyway, we'll talk about it offline. Really think you should be doing this. All right. I'm going to give 3 points to Sneaky Steve Bradbury, because I just love that he was the one who made the tribe dynamics of the seven. Yes, he wasn't the one kind of advocating for who exactly should go home, but I don't know if it really matters on day one, as long as it's not you and you're like primary people. And yeah, the fact that he is now like in the most athletic group, basically because they're athletes, even though he might not be super actually athletic, I think was just really clever. And he set the tone from the get-go. He was the first person doing it and he absolutely got the numbers on his side. So 3 points to Steve. 2 points I want to give to Nova. It was close between them. I love that she controlled that first vote. I love that she...
Well, this is really BS. You already have my three and my two. So I'm really annoyed.
Yeah, that's what my brother said would happen, because we always agree.
No, but by going first, you make it seem like I'm just imitating you. This is your screwing me over here. I see what this is. This is some sort of like psychological warfare where I see your game.
All right, well, I'll let you give the 1 point first after this. But
no. Talk. Give your reasons for Nova.
Okay. Well, Nova. Yeah. I mean, I love that she was approached by both sides. I love that everyone wanted to work with her. She was the one who got her way. She kept people in the game she could work with, and she kept, you know, she took someone out of the game that she didn't like. So you have to, again, admire the execution. Lost it a little bit for me just because I felt like you have to be throwing your weight around on day two, but I still really admire what she did. But Steven, okay, fine. So don't change your points, because I don't like when people change their cheesy points based on what I say, because people should authentically get their points. But yeah, you can continue.
Like, I have no way to prove that I'm not changing my points, but this was always is very devious of you, Shannon.
But we agree about everything. We said it would be a problem.
Yeah. So I'm also starting with Steven at three. And I disagree with you. You know, you said he didn't actually name the person who went home. I think that was one of his strengths, right?
Yeah.
So even in agreement, we can find disagreement. I think that's really beautiful.
No, I really agree with what you said.
You know, like the fact that he was able to both form the alliance and not emerge as the leader of that alliance, you know, really was such a strong play. So he created that safety net for himself and then was able to kind of like remove himself from it. You know, the only dangerous thing for him, I think, is that Luke is aware that he's a big player. Mm. And so
has an idle clue as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nova, basically, literally exactly what she said. And I am going to give my
Steven,
one
point. I love
point.
That everything you just said was just like our DMs. It's just exactly what you said.
Yeah, yeah.
People are getting a glimpse.
There's no point in us DMing, though. It's like, you know, just whatever you're thinking, I validate it. we don't need to communicate anymore. I'm going to give my one point to Andy.
How could you take my point? Now people think I'm copying you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. See, how do you like it? Yeah. Those shoes on the other foot here. For, you know, really establishing himself incredibly well in the contenders tribe. You know, he's really in, he's probably in the best spot of almost anyone in the game right now. Well, except that his tribe is kind of losing. They're even, you know, he's on the weaker tribe, but the fact that he does seem to be really tight with people on that tribe, nobody is thinking of him as a target. Nobody realizes that he knows the game as well as he does. And yet he's playing, he seems to be in all of the different conversations. I think it's great. And he obviously is a really great narrator for the show. And he's a great, seems to have a real strategic sensibility. What did I miss about Andy?
No, yeah, no. You said everything that I wanted to say, and
the
podcast is over. I was actually choosing for the one point between Andy and Harry. It gets a little difficult because I'm thinking about my points like per episode, and I think that, you know, I was choosing between like basically who gets the fishy for that episode, and I think it's kind of a similar of why I gave three to Steve and two to Nova. You know, Andy and Harry were kind of just like the on the other side, you know, on the other tribe doing a similar thing where I feel like Andy still got his way and was still in a power position without it being super known. And Nova, you know, obviously got her way, but it was just like a little bit more obvious. And it's kind of the same with Andy and Harry, where they were both definitely driving the strategy. But for Harry, he was just more out front. I just gave one point to the contenders because I just felt like that vote was lower stakes in general, whereas like the actual tribe dynamics were decided on the champions. And this was basically just deciding between two weaker players. So I just made it one point there. But I think that, you know, honorable mention, obviously, to Harry, honorable mention to Pia. I think if I was just giving votes for the first episode, it would have been one vote to Pia. And if I was giving votes for the second episode, I think I would have been doing three to Andy, two to Harry, and one to Luke. You know, finding a clue. We've talked at length about what he kind of did right in this week, despite voting incorrectly. I'm really impressed with how he did in terms of the two returning players Australian Survivor has seen. He had a better first week, I'll definitely say that. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he's an honorable mention there. But Steven, yeah, we agree too much with each other. Do you think that the listeners
will be angry?
Well,
no, but I want to disagree about Harry. I disagree about Harry, actually.
Great.
I thought that, like, Harry was not in a great spot at all. You know, like he ends up, you know, really taking a very vocal strategic lead in the tribe in a way that is basically, you know, for what to him is essentially a trivial difference, right? Like, why does he care so much about putting his own neck out there, you know, to choose between Laura versus Baden? It's not like he has super tight bonds with Baden. It's not like Laura is in any way targeting him. Like, yes, we see Laura strategizing, but Harry becomes super noticeable. You even have a conversation between Matt and Laura where they're like, man, Harry's really taking everybody off and like, you know, going and strategizing with them. So suddenly he's like really like putting himself into this like very visible strategic position without a particularly notable strategic goal. So like, yes, he like gets his way, but does he, you know, cement some alliance? Does he like eliminate some enemy? It didn't necessarily seem that way. So I really respect the Chizzy points, and I'm not going to give them out willy-nilly. So yes, Harry got it. Like, yes, Harry was able to execute a strategy, and that, I can't give him even a hypothetical Chizzy point.
I'm really enjoying this minor disagreement we're having, but how can you praise Nova for doing what Harry did very similarly on the other tribe? Is it because you feel Harry is more visible than Nova became through, you know, making her move?
Yeah, for two reasons. The first is that, yeah, I think Nova did it much more discreetly, right? She didn't really, like, go out and like, you know, like I mentioned with that conversation with Matt, right? Where, like, it's like, man, Harry sure is, like, off scrambling everywhere. No one was saying that about Nova. She kind of did it pretty subtly. And the other thing was that I think Anastasia was more of a problem for Nova than Laura was for Harry. And obviously we're only seeing a very small slice of, you know, their slice of life here, but we certainly didn't see Laura like plotting against Harry at all. But we did see that tension between Anastasia and Nova.
I mean, I guess we saw Harry kind of worried about the dynamics in terms of like what Laura could bring in terms of, you know, that really scary female alliance, but you know, Laura was trying to get some people together who weren't Harry. So I still think Baden is a better player in the game for him. Baden's going to be maybe a number for him and for Andy, but just the fact that, yeah, as you said, the visibility made him an honorable mention for you. The visibility drops him even below honorable mention territory. And when there's so many honorable mentions, that's like, that's a hard place to be. But I'm really glad, Stephen, that we can have, you know, only 99%, you know, overall strategic thinking being the same instead of the full 100. That's good podcast.
Well, that's right. We have room to grow. I'm probably if this were, if you didn't agree with me about everything, I might not have disagreed with you about that.
If I didn't agree with you about everything, I don't know if you'd be on the podcast. Like, that's why we're doing this, right? And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. Okay, so we have some questions for the listeners, from the listeners for the two of us, Stephen. People were asking so many questions about this first two episodes, which is exciting. This first one we got from a couple of people. Felipe Shimon asked, what is a memory champion? Is it like Australian Jeopardy? So we got these questions from people because I think our international listeners think memory sport is like a thing in Australia, and then it's not a thing in America. And that's really not true. Like, memory sport is a thing that exists in all countries. Yes. And just none of us know about it. And we all had to Google it this week because of Anastasia. So we're all on the same playing field, which is that it's here and we're just not talking about it.
No, there's a great book written by Joshua Foer, who's the brother of the novelist Jonathan Safran Foer, called Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. And he is an American who actually like started to research like the ancient Greek tools to have incredible memories, and he ended up actually competing in a memory competition, and he became our USA memory champion. So I think it is like, it's just like quickly remembering like strings of numbers. Like, I think like you're supposed to like, you have to remember like a deck of playing cards. And so it's like tasks like that. But there is in fact this sort of classical way of doing it where you create what's called a memory palace, or where you create in your mind like a physical space, like a physical series of rooms. And then you picture yourself walking through the place and you put things you need to remember in like different spots. So if you, I mean, I'm not going to be able to come up with great examples off the cuff, but like if I wanted to remember, the King of Hearts, is the first card, you might like in my memory palace, I might, you know, think of someone who I think of as regal, or like I might imagine like a big bleeding heart with a crown on top of its head, like standing at the door to the palace. So, you know, then you just create like really vivid images. So anyway, it's really cool. I would highly recommend this book. Sorry, that was a total detour.
No, I'm so glad you have intel on this.
No, it's called Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. It's really, really interesting.
Stephen, I should have known you'd be like an expert in this, considering the immunity challenge you won, you got through your memory, right? So lucky Anastasia wasn't out there, because she actually is a memory champion, but you did, you know, remember all the numbers for the immunity challenge in Token Genes, and that's how you won that challenge.
I was so bummed to see her go. I was really like looking forward to her, like her great feats of memory.
I know. She was really cool. She was just like a really intelligent woman who, you know, the exit interview was coming up, but I did ask her, it's like, isn't ballet a sport? Like, why is ice skating a sport and not ballet? Like, I feel like it's pretty unfortunate not to be in the Athletes Alliance right then.
I know. And she had such a great quote about like her her feet bleeding. That was like entirely like, when we empty our shoes and there's blood comes out, that's a good day. Like, what an insane,
that's a terrible day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What like a credit, literally like insane benchmark.
Yeah. And especially like Susie later is like, this is why the athletes, you know, can bond, is because we've all been through these really hard things and with all the perseverance. I'm like, you just voted out Anastasia and her feet were bleeding and her knees were dirty. So perseverance was happening there. Edward Morris asks, how scary is that immunity idol?
Oh my God. Oh, I can't believe we didn't talk about this. That immunity idol was, that's like honestly one of the worst immunity idols I think like the show has ever seen. Like, it looked like some producer gave their 10-year-old daughter a cow skull and asked them to bedazzle it. It was so bad.
Bedazzled cow skull. Yeah, yeah. We're going to make that the hashtag. Yeah, I do think that it looks like they went to the graveyard in The Lion King and just like decorated something they found there. And they, like, the bull theme in general is like very much all over the season. And I don't really know why. It's a bit random, but. Yeah,
we got a lot of cow skulls. Like, what do we do with them? Where can we put them?
Yeah, how do they get that cow skull? Like, I am a vegetarian. I don't appreciate, like, were any cows actually harmed in the making of that immunity idol? I feel like I'm Joanna from the Amazon here. Just like, I wouldn't want to hold that idol.
And is it a cow? And I know we're going to get crazy. It might be a horse.
That makes me like feel as bad. I don't want the immunity idols to be the skulls of animals. Like, that's my only request. You can do anything you want. It can be literally a stick. Just please don't, you know, use corpses is all I would request of production.
Very strange. It was very, very, very weird. Cause also like the deck, like the weird, like red string that's tying it to, it just like, it looks like someone got a little, like, you know, a little frisky with their glue gun, you know, like it just it's kind of a nonsensical, like, I mean, I love, you know, the production of Australian Survivor. I love how bare, like stripped down it is. I think it's really cool that they sort of just try to capture some of those primal elements of what makes Survivor. But this immunity idol was not doing it.
No more skulls, no more actual animal skulls. That's big no on that. Mark Percy wants to ask you, Stephen, when we can expect to see you on Australian Survivor, because, you know, international, you know, is inviting US contestants. They did with Russell. And Andy even said that he wants to, you know, win. And then he wants to come back as the first Australian All-Star, which already, you know on that because Luke is back. And then he wants to go on US All Winners. And I don't feel great about that for him either. So but are you going to come onto Australian Survivor?
Definitely never. I'm definitely never playing Survivor. But I'm excited for like a season of, like, I want that global season to happen so badly where we get, you know, like Lisa from New Zealand, and you get like Luke and you get Tony and, you know, all in one place. Like, with that, it's just, there's so much, so many, like, it would just be so epic. I do hope it, as a fan, I hope that happens in some capacity.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you don't want to play Survivor again, you're definitely not going to come on the franchise that can have the, you know, 47 Alliance, you know, just as a name. I don't feel like that's great. We did get a question from Josh Creek, who asked, what sport are you going to take up to get your spot in any future season Champions Tribe Majority Alliance? Because I did tweet saying, look, I've always said, obviously, no one should lie about their profession. It's never worth it. There's no situation where that is wise. But now I'm thinking, like, look, if you are on the Champions Tribe, just pretend you're an athlete. Like, you have to pretend you're an athlete, because that is the way to survive in this context.
But you're right that it's very strange. Like, why isn't ballet considered a sport? Like if I said ping pong, would that count?
Yeah.
Like, surfing is a sport, but ballet is not. Like, what counts as, like, what's like the most believable sport that we could play?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I see the questions in advance. So I've had like hours to think about this. And I was just on my computer Googling like sports that involve cats, which is not a thing. Then I Googled like, is podcasting cats a sport? Stacking.
Oh yeah.
It's not a sport. So I've been literally ruminating on this for hours and I've got nothing. I've got no sport.
Chess is a sport, right?
Not if ballet is not a sport, I don't think. Huh? Within the line of what people consider a sport, which seems pretty arbitrary, to be honest.
But chess is competitive, at least. You know, ballet is not, like, you're not like balleting all, you know, against someone.
Ballet off sounds like an amazing sport though. Like, I want to watch that battle, the ballet battle. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. This is tough. Like, it would have to be believable. That's the real challenge.
Mm.
I really think ping pong is the best I'm going to do.
Yeah. Ping pong. Okay. I've got nothing, unless people can consider podcasting a sport. I like have had hours and I was Googling things and there's just no sport I could believably play, and definitely not believably play to a good level. So that's why I can't go on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what about I mean, golf is a good one, but you know, that's taken now. Andy's really like, oh, tetherball. What about tetherball?
You know, it would be amazing if one of the champions pretended to be a golfer to get in with the sporty people, and then they'd be like, Andy, you're a golf blogger. Like, do you know much about him? And he'd be like, definitely, because he's lying about that too. And then they'd be trapped in this lie. Ugh, I want to see that so badly. If only like Luke had lied about being a golfer.
That would be amazing. That would be next time.
And speaking of Mike Bloom, the great aforementioned Mike Bloom asks, when will Steven have freelance golf writer Andy on the Paraphrase podcast?
Oh my God. Yeah, we've got to talk to him about his golf blogs. Yeah. how does he do it?
It sounds like great writing. I'm definitely enthused to read Andy's golf blog about, you know, Luke Tokyo, the premier golf player. Saffron on Twitter asks, would you rather give JLP a mud cuddle or get a cheeky wink from him like Luke did in that first tribal council?
Oh, I want the cheeky wink. I really liked that. The mud cuddle was great, but it seemed, you know, I don't know how great JLP felt it was, but like that's sort of like casual, like, hey, I got you, bro. Like, hey, I got you, bro. You know, like that's where you want to be with the hosts.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to give a mud cuddle because then I, by definition, would need to be muddy, which I don't want to be. So I'd rather just, you know, keep my distance and get the wink. I'm happy with the wink.
And the wink is like, you know, it's like I'm kind of in, I'm like part of the family now.
Yes. I mean, that's what I love that. Like when you have, because like, you know, everyone has their champion and people might be watching because they're a big NRL fan. So they're watching ET. Like Luke calls himself the people's champion and he's definitely the Survivor fans champion. So for me, I look at that and it just warms my heart that Luke Tokyo is back on freaking Survivor and it excites me so much. And JLP is pumped up about it and it's just great.
When did this film?
I think like a few months ago. It was this year. It was probably like April to June-ish.
Okay. So, yeah. Wow, that's a fast turnaround.
Yeah. And Luke, as we know, you know, he had a baby shortly before that. So I was worried that maybe his head wouldn't be in the game, but he, you know, took back to it like a duck to water. And I just love to see that from Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Steven, I'm so happy you came on. I'm so happy we had one disagreement in this 1.5 hour podcast. I'm so happy we have so many hashtag choices for people who got to the end of the podcast. Hashtag Hadaji, the pun I made up without Mike Bloom. Mike will be so proud. Hashtag edit ice cream as well as a choice in terms of, you know, you getting back into the edit talk. But hashtag bedazzled cow skull. I can't even say cow skull. It's a really, that's a hard one. But I do think I don't want bedazzled cow skull to be the hashtag.
Hadaji is good.
Hadaji is not about dead animals. So we're going to go with Hadaji. And Steven, we just mentioned the Paraphrase podcast. Where can people find you and what you're doing with, you know, some of the content you're putting out?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's been, like I said, over the summer, it's been a little bit of a hiatus in terms of putting out content, but, you know, find me on Twitter at Stephen Fishback and Instagram also at Instagram, Stephen Fishback. I feel like my Instagram game is really poor, but I feel like I need to improve it. You know, like I'm always so impressed with people who, my last post was from like 3 or 4 months ago. I'm also really impressed with people who are just like, you know, here's another snapshot into my life. I'm a little bit like too paranoid private. I don't know. Maybe there's like a different word that's like, so for someone who doesn't feel totally comfortable putting out a lot of Instagram content, but feels like he ought to.
For me, Instagram is like the social media platform for people who leave the house. And that's why I also don't post that much. And then Twitter is the platform for people who never leave the house. And that's why I'm constantly on Twitter. So Twitter is really my jam. That's where I can put out all my thoughts. And I definitely do that. So you guys can, you know, this is my plug, follow me on Twitter and actually on Instagram. You know, sometimes I put out some stuff at Shannon Gaitz, Shannon Gaitz. Yeah, I'm putting out so much stuff on Twitter. Firstly, you know, tweeting about the show and putting out those hashtag chili charts when it starts kind of ramping up, and question threads for podcasts like this. So there's so much to talk about. I hope you guys will go there and follow me. In the meantime, Survivor South Africa marches on. Episode 11 aired today, 11 of 18. So we're really getting through it. I cover that every week with Mike Bloom. And if anyone wants to watch, you can always DM me on any platform, Reddit, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, as I said, no life. So Twitter, just DM me. I will get you the links for that because it's really so much fun. But last week we had PK on from season 6. This week we have season 6's Annalise Sainsbury. So really, really excited to chat to her and Mike about it, you know, this weekend. And next week, the Australian Survivor show, you know, continues. Survivor Australia is on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday next week. That's in 2 days. Yeah, it's a lot.
Wild.
And I have such a good guest to recap it with me. Someone making their debut to the Australian Survivor podcast, and that is Josh Wigler.
So, oh my God!
Yeah, I'm pumped up about it. I'm pumped up about these Americans in before it becomes an unmanageable amount of episodes, which is what I'm trying to do. Because you know we'll be at 5 in a week from now.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Wait, 5 within the same week?
Well, it is 5 within the same week because this was Wednesday, Thursday. And then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So it's actually 5 and 6 days and Survivor South Africa slap bang in the middle. So I took a day off work today, Stephen. I'm not going to lie.
My God.
I can't do it.
That's wild. Yeah. That's commitment to this, to the know-it-alls.
Okay. It was too much to actually have my life and do this, which is my real life. And the other stuff is just, you know, noise, my job. So anyway, Stephen, it was such a joy to talk to you. I'm so thankful that you came on and I had so much fun talking to you.
I know. I've really been wanting to do some kind of podcast with you forever. So thank you for making this happen. I'm so honored to, be the kickoff the Australian Survivor podcast season once again.
Yeah.
Hold this slot for me next season too.
Okay, great. Oh, I'm so excited about that. Definitely lock it in. But it was great to talk to you and, you know, as I've said, a thrill for me. I've been listening to you obviously on RHAP for so many years, and like it hasn't even really sunk into me that I just hosted a podcast that you were on. That's amazing. Wow, good job, me.
Well, if that's amazing, I can see why you feel like you're represented by Baden's inspiring.
I am the awkward nerds. Baden, please do me proud. Do it for all the awkward nerds out there.
Just like be an awkward nerd, you know, do it for the awkward nerd. That's what I'm saying. Like do it for the awkward nerds, but don't just talk constantly about how you're doing it for the awkward nerds.
Anyway, you said it one time, Stephen. We really disagree about this. The end of our relationship is this Baden talk.
I liked Baden, but like it was, you know, like the whole like I'm inspirational. Like that's what I don't like. You know, like be inspired by my story. Like there's something just so self-congratulatory about that.
Okay, I disagree with you so much. We better end the podcast right now. We're really getting to the end of our streak. But Stephen, thank you so much. Such a joy to talk to you. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to all you guys for listening. And I'm gonna throw it now to my exit interviews, first with Anastasia and then with Laura. So enjoy. Hi, Anastasia. Thank you so much for coming on to talk with us. I'm so sorry it's under these circumstances because I really wanted to see a lot more of your game.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me in. Me too. I wanted to see more of my game as well.
I know. It's so disappointing. Well, I'll just jump straight into the interview because I know you don't have a lot of time. For us, I think we saw the Sporty 7 come together and then the other 5 also seemed to really join together quite quickly. Were those social dynamics on the island as obvious to you as it was to us on the show?
Yes and no. Certainly there was an alliance of, Luke and myself and Pierre and Janine and David. Yeah, there was something going on there. And I felt a little excluded from the Sporty 7 group, which was, you know, a little bit frustrating because, as an ex-professional ballet dancer, we're actually pretty athletic and, I think that often dancers are underestimated in their physical capacity, if you know what I mean. So, there was that dynamic of 2 separate groups. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you as a ballerina. Surely that's part of the Sporty 7 compared to ice skaters and stuff.
I know. Well, that's the thing, right? But I think that it seems like it's sort of split halfway down the population. Half the population kind of goes, "Oh, ballet, that's just flitting around, you know, in little pretty skirts," and then the other half who kind of have a bit of knowledge of it somehow kind of go, "No, that's like, you know, really hardcore. They train all day, there's blood in their shoes, and like, you know, you have to be able to like, it's really athletic. Just because, you know, just because we're slim, it's misinterpreted, you know." And so, but in the challenge, I thought that was pretty obvious. Like, you know, I was pretty on top of the challenges, and so I kind of thought that the sports people would include me in their group. And I think, you know, I think some of them did. There were some of the sports people were going, "Oh, my, you know, she's pretty strong." And I think that they were not so keen on my name being out there as, you know, as Nova and maybe some others. But yeah, it was just unfortunate that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, neither wanted to put my name out there. And you know, I think people felt they kind of had to go with that. Yeah.
I mean, we saw Nova kind of be the tipping point for your game. Was the conflict basically what we saw on TV with a lot of the food stuff, or did it go beyond that in what was actually happening?
No, Hugh, it wasn't really even conflict. It was more, I really liked everyone in the championship, like everyone. And if anything, I just kind of felt like, oh, I haven't clicked with Nova yet. That was like, that's from my perspective. I'm going, I haven't quite clicked with Nova yet. And I kept kind of trying to initiate friendship, but feeling rebuffed. You know, it just feeling like there was this, almost like, you know, two magnets pushing in the wrong direction and away from each other. And I couldn't quite work it out. And I just think for whatever reason, she just didn't like me. You know, like it's understandable, you know, in a group of people, there's going to be someone who goes, oh, that girl rubs me the wrong way or something. And she was, you know, she was pretty assertive herself with things. And, you know, go pick up that, go do this, go do that. And I was like, it's all right. I'll just do that. That's fine. I don't want to rub this woman the wrong way. But clearly, even by doing that, I did somehow. But, yeah, so it was a bit more than what you saw, because obviously, you know, you're trying to fit in 3 days of filming into, you know, a 90-minute episode or whatever. So there's a bit more going on than that, but it was just kind of this, you know, just like not clicking.
Mm. And then in terms of your relationship with the five, who did you feel were kind of your tightest allies in that group?
Oh, I really liked Janine. I felt like we clicked straight away together in terms of, you know, I really admired her and we had some similarities kind of on the same wavelength with a few things. Luke, I think Luke's really funny. I thought he was really funny from the other season. And while I know he can be, you know, he can be slippery, obviously, that's his gameplay, but I really liked him and I kind of felt like we clicked. You know, sometimes with the same sense of humour or something, like he'd say something that I thought was really funny and we'd look at each other and kind of know that we were laughing at the same thing. But, yeah, so those two, I think probably I was pretty tight with.
Yeah.
I thought initially I was pretty tight with Pia, but then unfortunately that whole, you know, it sort of, you know, it came into the middle of our group, you know, with Nova sort of walking up and coming into our conversation. So, but before that, you know, Pia and I were, you know, getting along pretty well together. And I liked David as well. We got along quite well together. We sort of didn't see it so much on that episode, but I had some good chats with him as well.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that David voted for you. So I was interested in that relationship because he, you know, obviously Pia turned on you, but he was someone I wasn't expecting to vote for you.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised about that too, but I think he was probably, you know, from what I know of him, I'd say he was probably aware of what was happening and thought, well, I don't want to be, you know, if she goes home, I don't want the next people to turn on me.
Mm. Do you think your other allies knew you were going home, like Luke and Janine, who voted with you, and they just stuck with you, or do you think they were blindsided there?
I think they were hoping there was going to be a turnaround, and I think there was a chance that there was going to be one. You know, it really depended what came out, you know, at Tribal. And for whatever reason, I didn't quite get the opportunity to articulate, you know, I wanted to articulate clearly and calmly without emotion, kind of, you know, hey, guys, if we're voting logically and not emotionally here, not being manipulated by other people, going forward, we really need to win challenges. Who's going to help us win challenges? Well, I can tell you I can help you because physically you can see in challenges that I've helped already, but when there's mental challenges, you know, I might come in handy as well. But that kind of didn't happen, and that, I think that was unfortunate because I think it could have actually changed the outcome.
Yeah, it's such a shame that it all became about this physical example of strength, which, as you said, you bring anyway, but then you're a memory champion. So in terms of
challenges, you know. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like it was weird because Nova's argument, you know, kind of didn't hold up in terms of she was just kind of saying because she's a big personality and, you know, maybe, yeah, towards merge or something that you start or you're getting too annoyed with someone or I don't know. But for a start, I don't think the others felt that, you know, they weren't being irritated like she was. But also, you know, in the beginning, you're trying to keep the tribe strong, you know, for challenges so that you don't end up at Tribal. And so I really don't think that was a very logical vote, you know.
Mm.
Which was interesting. It was interesting that, you know, she managed to use her political acumen, skills, whatever you want to call them, to, you know, to convince people to vote that way. You know, hats off to her to do that. But it just, I don't know. I don't see that as a logical vote.
No. And then, so when you were with the five hoping to vote for Susie, who were the people from the 47 you were hoping would maybe vote with you in kind of that swing vote position? Because we saw Nova. I don't know if that was ever really legit. Like, were there anyone that you had relationships with that you thought would vote on that side?
Oh, from the 47?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I had good relationships with several of the 47. To be honest, you know, there wasn't anyone I wasn't really enjoying their company, and I felt the same. You know, you feel that reciprocal, you know, they like me. You know, you can feel that. And it is, of course, you're under pressure and stress, and so the relationship is not built normally in terms of, you know, it's not like you can have a leisurely long lunch with one and actually get to know each other. But, you know, I did feel like, you know, I really liked Abby, and I thought, you know, I think she liked me and I liked DT and Simon. And I kind of was getting along well with a lot of them. It really was just Nova that I hadn't yet got to know, kind of. And I was kind of just keeping it with an open mind. I didn't realise that she felt like that. I just kind of thought, oh, you know, hopefully given time we can just get to know each other as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it really feels like it was Nova led. All for Nova.
Yeah. So I think that was really interesting. I haven't seen that in a lot of Survivor episodes, you know, a lot of Survivor seasons where in the first episode it's, you know, there's that sort of manipulation and then like not a sensible group vote being made.
Mm, yeah, it definitely felt, you know, quite personal rather than it being, you know, for the tribe.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask again on your relationship with Pia, because as you said, you were allies at the beginning. And then you had to, you know, turn on each other. So did that get personal for you, or did you both kind of understand that that was what had to be done?
Oh, look, Pia's a super fan, and I certainly, you know, I'm a fan and I know what's going on. So I don't think either of us would, you know, obviously at the time it feels a little bit personal because you're, oh, God, but you know what's going on. Like, I know that she's trying to look after herself, you know, like, so that initial kind of alliance is built on the fact that you go, oh, yeah, I like this person. I could work with this person. And I think that her then trying to, you know, defend her position, it's understandable, you know. That's what you do in the game of Survivor to try and win. So, you know, I don't hold any personal, feelings of, you know, aggression towards her or anything. I know totally what she was doing, but you know, obviously at the time, yeah, you are going, oh, damn. because you just realize you just don't have the numbers, basically.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, you're a fan as well of the show. Like, what was your history with the show before this?
I'm a new fan to the show in terms of Survivor came to my attention last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through people saying to me, oh, you'd be great on that show. You know, you should go for that show. And I was thinking, what is this show everyone's talking about, you know? And so then I started getting into it and obviously watched all the, you know, all the seasons I could get my hands on and everything like that. And particularly after, you know, I knew I'd been selected, you know, became increasingly a fan of it in terms of, you know, there's so much of manipulation, and it's just like, you know, it's the ultimate mental and physical challenge. And given that I'm a mental and physical athlete, I was like, yeah. So became a bit of a fan. But, you know, obviously being in there and coming out of the game, I know now what I'd need to do to win, you know, even that small kind of glimpse into it and how your own personality responds in that sort of environment. It gives you that extra little bit of information that you go, oh yeah, right. Next time, damn.
Yeah. Well,
thank
you so much for coming on with us. I honestly think, you know, I had to Google what memory sport was this week in anticipation for you coming on the show. I think that sounds so cool. That would have been really helpful for challenges I don't really understand. But
I know, yeah. I mean, but also you've got to imagine day 30, right? Imagine it's day 30. And I've built up these files of memory information on every single contestant and every single vote and every single tribal, and it's all organized how you would, like a spreadsheet in a computer. That's how well you can memorize it. And then, you know, day 30, someone like, you know, hypothetically Nova tries to get you at day 30, and all you do at tribal is you pull out that folder in your head and you go, now, wait a minute, guys, let's look at this logically, and just totally lay it out so bare that everyone goes, yeah, and turn things around, you know, do a dramatic change. It would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, well, that actually is really threatening. Were you very honest about, you know, your experience in memory sport with everyone? Because that actually, now that you mention it, is extremely threatening.
No. So I hid that. So I tried to very much promote the, oh, I was an ex-ballerina,
right,
but I'm also, you know, I'm a memory athlete. But then when I was talking to people in the camp about that, which you sort of didn't see on the show, I was saying stuff like, oh, yeah, it's really great for remembering, you know, 400 zeros and ones in the right order in 5 minutes, but it's not so, you know, it's not so useful in real life. And that's total malarkey. Mm-hmm. You know, it's useful in whatever you want it to be useful in. You just apply the techniques.
Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah, I did have this strategy in place where I was building up these, you know, dirt files or files on everyone, and it just would have been so super cool. But yeah, maybe next time.
Yeah, I'm so sad we didn't get to see that. But thank you so much for coming on to explain some of your game and to talk to us. So we really appreciate it at Rob Has a Podcast.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on Rob Has a Podcast. I'm so sorry to be talking to you so soon, and would have loved to see more from your game through the rest of the season.
Thank you. Yeah, devastating to have gotten the boot first off the try, but, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'm interested because Harry and Andy really seem to be driving you going home. So was there any, like, particular conflict with Harry in particular who seemed to really see you as a threat, or do you feel like it was really just that you were very threatening to them?
I definitely think I cottoned on to Harry quite early, as did a lot of the tribe, that he was the one playing the game hard. I feel like Andy managed to fly under the radar with the rest of the team as to how hard he was playing the game in the beginning. But yeah, I was very sus on Harry, and as a result of being sus on Harry, I was telling everyone that they should be sus on Harry, and I think Harry cottoned on to that and said, right, Laura's off.
Right. Who do you think that he might have heard that from?
Potentially maybe Casey. Harry and Casey were having a lot of conversations, maybe even Sam as well. Who knows in the game of Survivor? That's the thing. It's 24/7 paranoia. The conversations that you have, you're constantly worried, if I say this to you, is this going to then hurt my game and you're going to tell that person, or is this going to benefit me because I can help? Saying that's going to get you on my side. So it's this constant, I guess, balancing act of what do you say and what do you hold back.
Yeah, and we didn't really get to see a lot of your closer bonds in the game. We saw you talking to Casey about maybe starting something with most of the girls. Who did you consider your tightest allies in your time on the island?
I definitely got along really well with Hannah, even though she ended up voting for me at the end. I think she just did what she needed to do, which was go with the majority in order to further herself in the game. But we got along really well. She's hilarious. Once you finally get to see her get a bit of TV airtime, I think everyone will love her.
Yeah. And then Maddie as well was someone we saw really trying to keep you. So do you think that that was just a strength thing, or did you have a good relationship with him as well?
Yeah, Maddie and I had a bit of a chat pretty early on saying that we were keen to work together. And I think Matt is someone who does respect people who are willing to push themselves and have drive and won't lay down, you know, have a bit of fight in them. And I think he saw that in me versus what he saw in Baden, which is why he was generally on my side. But then Baden managed to appeal to the inner teacher in him at the end, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, Baden obviously was the other target. Do you feel like there were any other people who maybe could have been on the bottom who might have been potential to be voted out instead of you?
Yeah, well, I guess given what the four challenges were that I got to be a part of, they really swung in favour of the champions. They were seriously strength and weight-based.
Mm.
And while we were, as the show said, the younger team or the younger tribe, it was the champions that had the weight and the overall strength, particularly when it came to the girls. So, you know, they were just absolutely killing us. So there was probably, I reckon, about four of us that automatically were at the bottom of the pecking order, just purely based on what we were able to give to the tribe in terms of like competing in those challenges against the champions. So I'd say it was myself, it was Baden, it was Casey, and it was Hannah.
Right.
In terms of size pecking order, if you will.
Yeah, Australian Survivor loves to do the brute force challenges in particular, which is just, you know, that one type of strength. But as we know throughout the game, the strength really does diversify into, you know, what can be helpful for the tribe.
Exactly, exactly. So I do think that I drew a bit of a short straw there, but at the same time, you know, Baden was definitely the one to fly under the radar a little bit more, be the one to convince people he would be the easy vote if they needed a number, whereas I just played it bad. I was trying to fade into the background and I just walked in there and couldn't do it against my personality. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just I was my own downfall.
Right. And I noticed during the episode, this might be completely off base, but was there a bit of a male-female divide? Because I noticed, you know, Harry saying that he was worried about a women thing. We did see that you were trying to connect with some of the women and make an alliance there. And then he even says at some point that the boys are basically going to go for you. So was there that divide there or am I off base?
I think there was a few of us girls kind of having conversations around being on the bottom of that pecking order and concern about if we didn't do something, just getting picked off one by one by the bigger, stronger players, which do tend to be the guys. But we just didn't have the numbers to be able to swing anything, and people were just so hell-bent on trying to keep the tribe strong. So to get rid of any of those stronger players was just really, really hard. Baden was even involved in some conversations about trying to pick off some of the bigger guys as well. So, you know, It was crossing our mind. It just wasn't possible to pull off, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then from being on the Contenders tribe, obviously now getting to talk to you, I mean, we obviously see a lot of bravado, like on the mat with the champions. What was really the mindset for the Contenders in facing the champions at this stage?
Look, we were actually pretty upbeat about it all. Like, obviously, any time that we got beaten, it felt brutal and we were a bit down. But we actually did have a pretty strong team. We did lack that weight, as I said. What we just needed was more of those kind of obstacle challenges and whatnot to really prove what we were worth, something that wasn't quite so just brute force and brute strength.
Yeah. Were there any champions in particular that you recognised?
Yeah, there are a handful. Probably the biggest fangirl one was actually Janine Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love her. Seen her speak at a few different events. I think she's just a phenomenal human being. I will be surprised if she makes it to the end, though, because I feel like people just see her as way too much of a threat. She's too smart.
Yeah. I mean, but you were called too smart a few times, you know, in the episode, and that's one of the reasons you were targeted. Did you realize while you were out there that you were kind of projecting that threatening image, or did you not realize until you've been voted out?
Probably not to the extent until I got voted out, because there are a lot of people having different conversations around the tribe trying to get things to happen. I just think it comes down to when Harry and I would chat, I probably didn't give him enough of what he needed to say that I would be his number. I guess I kind of pushed back on him a little bit, and therefore that put an X on my back, and he saw Baden as the easier one to get on side. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about your history with Survivor? Like, how did you get involved with the show?
I have been a fan of the Australian Survivor series since it started. I hadn't actually watched a bunch of the US ones. My brother is an absolute super fan and has seen every single episode and can probably even tell you who's won and why of all the US series as well. So he tried to give me a bit of coaching before I walked in as to all those different US strategies and things that went on. But absolutely love the Australian series and will love watching the rest of this season now that I know some of the people on there a bit more personally as well. It's going to be great.
Yeah, well, great. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. I'm sorry that, you know, we couldn't get to see more of you on the island, but, you know, glad that you could bring it out there and still be yourself and go out there and be who you were.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Week one of Australian Survivor in the books. You had the recap with Stephen. You had the two exit interviews. So this is me just kind of closing it all up here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much if you got to the end, which you clearly did if you are here. Hashtag Hadaji. Next week, three episodes. It's going to be huge. Josh Wigler on the podcast to talk about it. And it's all happening. Australian Survivor, thank you for following along with us. And we will see you next week. Bye.